All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 5-9 of the Woodsboro Bros podcast. I am your host, Andrew Shore, here with my brother, who doesn't sound anything like me, Austin.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since I did that one.
No, we did that last episode.
Well, it's been a while since we recorded, so it's been almost 3 months. Well, we recorded in July, so it has been 3 months.
Yeah.
So, last episode, we did the I Know What You Did Last Summer trilogy, probably the fan favorite trilogy of all horror fans, I would have to say. Everybody loves those. Anyways, we are here. This is in October, and we've had, we've had a lot of things happen in 3 months, so this has been, it's been a long time coming. We've had, four different episodes planned, and this stuck. So we're in October, so it's Halloween, so we know what we're doing for these.
Yeah.
So obviously we were going to record a Craven episode for the 31st of August because that was when he passed away, and then that didn't happen, and then we were going to do we talked about another couple other movies too, and then none of those panned out. So here we are with our Christmas. Christmas for horror fans, I guess.
Yeah.
For Trick or Treat and what's that other one called? It's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I didn't forget it. I was just being a douche. Anyways, so we are going to be discussing those two films, but man, I haven't been keeping track, but we probably have about 50 things we could talk about with regarding the news. I mean, we found out so many different things in the past couple months with regards to, like, horror films and other films in general. So this is, like, I'll try to re-remember some of these things. But I know, just, like, to get into, like, news and stuff, we did find out that Scream 5 is actually shooting right now. Like they're already in they passed the script process. They're doing it. They're filming. So we've got the whole trio of cast of Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, and then David Arquette is all back filming. And that's the question of like, is any of them gonna die, or are they gonna be bulletproof like they have been in every. But like, this is new filmmakers. This is the first time there's no Kevin Williamson, there's no Wes Craven, there's no Dimension. It's all brand new people. So I don't know. Also, I'm kind of wondering what the tone's going to be like, because I think the tone is going to be kind of right if it's the same people from Ready or Not, which is what the directors are, the filmmakers are. So I'm I think they have the right tone for the Scream franchise, but I guess we'll see. I mean, this is obviously the thing for me is, Wes Craven being my favorite all-time filmmaker, that's just, impossible shoes to fill. So I'm wondering what is going to happen with that. I'm obviously going to be excited for it because it's just a Scream movie, but then it's like, it's going to be... I'm going to go in expecting, a 7 out of 10 and hoping for the best, hoping for better, but, that's going to be the thing, is, when the trailers come out, what's it going to be like? What's even the storyline? We haven't gotten anything. There's no leaks for the storyline whatsoever. Everybody's sworn to secrecy there, so I don't know. I don't know what we're going to get.
I know a lot of people are speculating that one of the three main characters is going to get killed off right off the bat. Honestly, I wouldn't like that if they did that.
Not right off the bat, no. And we were just watching a movie where they did,
just that. It didn't turn out well.
No. And it's also partly because they did that. Because if you're going to kill off somebody like that, of that importance, you need to do it at the end. And, there really needs to be, you need to build that up, have that emotional reaction to it.
If you do it at the beginning, you, as they say, blow your load too early, and that's kind of what happens.
It's like the new Terminator movie.
Yeah.
Sorry to spoil anybody, but John Connor gets killed 30 seconds into the movie, and it's like, okay, what the fuck are we doing now? It's like, and then they don't mention him for the rest of the movie. It's like, okay, well, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
I wouldn't, it wouldn't be...
Don't see that movie anyways, by the way. You don't need to see it.
I don't want to see it. The only, I guess it wouldn't be too bad if they just killed off one of them, as long as it's not Sydney at the beginning. If they killed off Sydney at the beginning, it will be a huge turn off. And there's some people have actually lobbied for that to happen. I'm just like, that's no.
Yeah.
Please no. Which I highly doubt they would do that. It's Scream 5. I'm excited for it. I know Dan Chase and them just won't quit posting about it. I'm just like, dude, the movie's like a year away. Let's quiet down a little bit. It's definitely sort of 2021.
Yeah, January or February, I can't remember.
Yeah, so, I mean, that would be a cool year. We'll have a new Scream movie and a new Halloween movie come out in the same year. And that'll be interesting.
That's, like, the only time that's happened, I think. One of them.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think it ever has happened, because Scream 1... Scream 2... Well, Scream 1 was 96, Halloween 6 was 95, H2O was 98, no Scream came out then, and then you had... Did nothing until 2007 for Halloween, yeah. And that was... and then 2009 you got the Rob Zombie movies, mm-hmm. And then... no Screams then. Scream 4 came out in 2011, so this will be the first year. So my two favorite franchises all time having a movie came out in the same year. I mean, obviously, the thing is that I partially agree with JP, is like the more that I watch the new Halloween, the less I like it, but that's only certain parts. It has so many epic moments in it too, so it's like it's hard for me to totally like diss on it like JP does, but like, it has, like, the opening to me is just so incredible. The first time I watched it in theaters, I was like, I don't know about all that.
Yeah.
But then, the more I watch it, it's, like, so thematically awesome. And then, I've said my piece of, like, once Michael Myers gets back, I'm like, meh. It's like, it's not scary at all. But for what it is, there's some epic moments in the movie. Now we have Scream 5 of, like, I don't know what to expect with this.
Yeah.
So we got Halloween Kills coming out, the best-titled movie ever. But to be honest, even though I'm not, like, the most excited for the movie, like, when I saw that teaser, they did release a teaser about a month ago, or 2 months ago now, maybe.
Yeah.
And it did get me excited. I was like, man, that's pretty awesome. Let it burn! And I'm like, that got me.
Yeah.
It was like... All right, I'm still going to go see it, obviously.
It's, yeah.
You know, my all-time favorite franchise, so I can't help but watch it. But it's just like, man, I really would love to see them maybe make it scary this time, but I don't know.
I think there are definitely portions of that movie, the last one, that were scary. I mean, there are some parts... I don't know if there were some parts that tried to be scary that weren't.
Only time when I felt tense at all was the Virginia Gardner, the babysitter scene. That was about it. That was the only time I really... Oh, and, I mean, the third final act, it was more, like, thriller-like, where I was, like, tense of, like, is he gonna pop out anywhere kind of thing. That wasn't necessarily, like, you know, tension build, like you know, how, like, there's, like, a dread, like, in the original Halloween, like, how there's a dread built up of, like, he's stalking these people, like, I'm scared, and then there's that payoff kind of thing. But, you know, still, I'll give it credit. I mean, it definitely was a tense, awesome sequence, too. I mean, it's a great way to end, because it's one of the best... It's probably the best sequence in the entire movie, because it's just... That entire last half an hour is just incredibly well done.
Yeah. I do think... The more I watch it, I like it a little bit more. I'm still, like, around the 8.5 range, but, I mean... That's kind of all I wanted from the Halloween movie. It's just a good Halloween movie. That's what I got. So
yeah.
But
if they had just shored up that middle part and like made it like more tense, like less like brutality and violence, and more stalking, and like not obviously like imitating the original movie. Like you can't recreate that. But I mean, like how Halloween 2 basically was just. Basically a both, like you had some stalking and you had some 80s slasher stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's perfectly fine. I mean, obviously I'm not expecting like H2O again has a lot of that stalking stuff and then a lot of 90s post-Scream slasher stuff in it. So it's like, obviously, you know, you can have both, like, well, you can make a modern slasher movie like with the the tone and like the pacing of like a modern movie, where you can be fast paced but also have like some really cool atmosphere too.
Yeah, I mean, even Rob Zombie's Halloween has a lot of stalking scenes in it while being super brutal.
Yeah, the second half for sure is like a lot of stalking and things. Yeah, it is well done in that regards too. So yeah, I agree with that. But either way, I'm still excited. Those are the two updates. We get Halloween Kills in October of 2021, next year, 1 year from now. Almost the date, I think, is when it's supposed to come out. And then it might actually be... I'm not actually sure. Don't quote me on when exactly Scream 5 is coming out, because...
I heard it's in January, from what I heard.
Again, don't... I mean, that's a... Like, freaking... Wonder Woman 1984 was supposed to come out in February, it's been delayed till December, and it's not going to come out in December, I can tell you that much either. So, Tenet, they rolled the ball out on Tenet, and it bombed in the U.S. theaters, at least. Did well overseas, because overseas, you know, does better than the United States, economically speaking, so this isn't a political debate, but still, I could go on and on about that, but yeah, we have... with all of COVID and stuff, there's no new movies coming out in theaters, really. Obviously, over summer, there was a lot getting released in the drive-ins and stuff like that, like lower-budget movies. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, that one found footage movie that I can't remember the name of now, that basically that haunted motel movie.
Mm-hmm.
That one, now that I've sat with it, I enjoyed it, but it was more forgettable. Again, it's like a 6.5 of 7, kind of a forgettable movie. We did get Tales from the Hood 3 to come out randomly. I didn't even know that they were making one. Yeah. I didn't know that there was one supposed to come out. And then randomly, I just looked in the Walmart and was like, Tales from the Hood 3? Okay. Tony Todd, I'll buy it right away. It was only $10, so I was on DVD. So I was like, well, blind buy of the year, I guess. Because, that was a cool thing. Like, we randomly got another Tales from the Hood movie again.
And yeah, I knew it was coming out, but I didn't know when.
Yeah, and I picked it up and was like, well, I'm watching this right away, because, man, I was so excited. And, anthology movies are just, you know, one of my favorite. Like, there's not a whole lot of anthology movies, but the ones that there are, I mean, I love. I mean, obviously, the original Tales from the Hood, and I really like the second one, and really like the third one as well. And then, you know, obviously, we're talking about one tonight, leave that there. And then A Christmas Horror Story is another one that I absolutely love.
Tales of Halloween's good.
Yep, again, that's another great one.
I really can't think of an anthology I dislike besides, the one that just came out was George Romero's Dead Time Stories 2, the second one.
That was awesome.
That was terrible. I actually don't mind the first one. I think the first one has some nice... stories in it. It's super low budget and looks terrible, but you can see what they're trying to do there.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
I just like the mermaid story. That's my favorite.
Yeah. I can't even remember which one. I know the second one had like one decent story and the rest one were terrible.
That's definitely low budget filmmaking.
Yeah.
And then if you want to consider that Romero and Argento team up as an anthology. I don't know if you would. They're just two stories. But I don't know what consists of an anthology.
Yeah, I consider it an anthology. You know, if it's just if it's two separate stories, two or more separate stories going on in the movie, I consider it an anthology. And I really like that movie too, to be wise. But yeah, honestly,
still haven't seen Campfire Tales. I need to get that one.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't like Tales from the Hood 3 as much as everybody else has. Pretty much everybody's universally saying it's better than 2. Honestly, I only see like 2 more. You know, was it three stories? I think three.
No, there's
three
four.
Or four. Okay, all the stories were fine, but nothing special. And then the wraparound story was the weakest yet out of the trilogy, I guess. The only thing good about it was Tony Todd was in it, and he's awesome. But yeah, it's just another, you know, the social commentary in the stories are really generic and kind of simple. It's just like, oh, don't be greedy. If you're racist, you're an animal. It's just like, you know, the stuff that the original one had to say was a lot more profound than that. And yeah. It's just like, with the current climate, there's just so much you could say. And it's just like, the second one did have that one really good story.
Yeah.
But overall, it kind of did the same thing this one did. But like, nobody's going to remember Tales from the Hood 3 as being like this important movie like we do Tales from the Hood. Like, you know, it just seems like it wouldn't be too hard to make one that has, you know, would be really relevant with everything going on in today's world. And they just, I feel like they've, you know, I thought it was all right, but not nearly as good as they could be.
Yeah. All right, ratings?
yeah. One day, I'm going to do a trilogy. Maybe they'll release a fourth one. I don't know. I honestly hope Jordan Peele makes a Tales from the Hood movie. That would be what brings it back, I think so.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other horror related news that we had. I know there's a ton, but like I can't quite remember.
I know there's some releasings that have happened. Arrow is releasing a box set of Tremors, the first one.
Yeah.
Love me some Tremors.
Of course.
How can you not? So, looks cool. I probably won't get it. I have the Blu-ray. But,
yeah.
It looks cool.
It's not, like, it's obviously, it's a movie I love, and it's a childhood favorite movie, too. But it's just not a movie that I'm, like, clamoring to have a special edition for. So it's just, like...
Not like Hills Have Eyes Part 2.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's a Craven movie, so it's fine. Anything Craven, I'm going to pick it up. I don't care if it's, like, Fireworks Woman, ultra-rare $70 edition, I'll probably be picking it up. Or Chiller. I haven't seen Chiller, you know, really actually seen Chiller.
Yeah.
or Invitation to Hell.
Oh, man.
yeah, like, they'll release some, like, Doppelganger release that, too, and it'll be, like, $30. I'll pick it up still.
That's just one crazy movie. I just have no...
it's no, great.
To watch again.
It is actually a really cool movie with social commentary, but it's...
I imagine it is. I mean, every Craven movie kind of had something to say. But
yeah.
I mean, it's just very... Amongst his other movies, it's extremely forgettable.
Yeah, well, it's a TV movie. It's a funny thing, though, is that that was the only time he had, like... Well, Peter Deming was a great, great cinematographer. He did the all four Scream movies. And then, but he actually, in Invitation to Hell, he actually had Dean Cundey with him to do it. So that's actually the one time where he had, a Academy Award nominated cinematographer with him. So it's kind of, and you can tell, I mean, that it is a great shot movie, but you can also tell that it's a very low budget TV movie that, you know, it definitely should have been a bigger budget movie because a lot of the effects and stuff at the third act really required a bigger budget.
Yeah, I remember most about it. It looks a little hokey.
Invitation to Hell is literal in this sense, too.
Yeah.
Like, just like Incubus.
Yeah, exactly.
Not quite as epic, though.
Yeah, exactly.
and then, I think, Scream Factories have just came out. Like, they're, I know Ghost Ship just came out, just was released, I think, like, last week.
Yeah, I know. I saw some people pick that up. I know the Friday 13th set came out. Much all positive reviews from that.
Yeah, there has been some issues with their discs and stuff like that.
I know that, yeah.
But, you know, that's going to happen with a release like that. I mean, I know the 3D isn't working quite right for the... And that is the frustrating thing. I did learn that you must have a 3D TV for that. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
so, like, the 10 people that have the 3D TVs are going to be excited for that. I mean, I'm huge for 3D, and especially that kind of 3D. Not, like, the Anaglyph, the Red Blue. Those ones are terrible and give you a headache. But, like, actual 3D is awesome when done right. And it would just be fun to see that one in 3D. Like, true 3D. Like, actual, you know, way it was supposed to be viewed. And, you know, 3D TVs just aren't budgetable right now. They're like $3,500, and that's just not doable. Like, so I don't know. That's kind of frustrating from Scream Factory's end of like that. But, you know, they were having issues with the Jason X audio. The sleeping bag kill had no audio to it. It just was the sleeping bag, and you just saw them hitting with the sleeping bag. And then, like, the unrated for Jason Goes to Hell wasn't actually unrated. It had some of the cut footage in it. And so it was just a little bit of a mess there. But they you know, they fixed that up pretty easily.
Yeah, I know. I'd be really interested to see the cut footage from part two to see what's...
I've already seen it. It's on YouTube. Yeah. It's actually really cool. Yeah. Like, some of them I'm like, okay, I can actually see them cutting. Like, it just was kind of unnecessary. Like... Especially when you, like, have it just, like, there's, like, just spurting out and it's, like, a 3 to 5 seconds where it's, like, longer. I feel like, okay, you don't really need it to just sit, hang on it for that long. Yeah. Like, I get it. There's blood coming out. But, like, there's one, like, the Jeff and Sandra death is really cool. Like, that one actually makes that scene make more sense. And then Ralph's kill's a little bit more extended, but I don't really think that one makes much of a difference. But Alice's kill, you see, like... the thing go through her nose, which again doesn't make much sense for her to die from that because it's just going through her nose and cheek. So I don't know. It's not like, but the Jeff and Sandra one for sure was really cool. And then there was another one that I thought was really cool too. That there was an extended, like just an extended cut from the hammer going in the head from the guy, the officer. It's just, there's some really cool ones in there. It's like mixed bag. The one I really obviously would have loved to see would be the actual footage, uncut footage from part 7, which I'm guessing now that it's probably lost forever.
I only have that like super, super rough footage that I've seen of it. There's probably no way to clean that up. It looks terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd been really cool. But yeah,
that's the thing. There's no audio for it too, so they would have to go back in. They would have to find a way to add in for it, which you couldn't do unless you did ADR from now, which you'd have to call that guy back in to do the ADR, and then you'd have to try to make it sound the same. That would require just a lot more budget probably than what they would need for it.
Yeah, the thing that I saw that was kind of weird is some of them had reversible cover arts, some of them didn't. But all the reversible cover arts like sucked. Like they didn't look particularly well. I guess it was just like it wasn't like Scream Factory made them. Just, you know,
they were alternate posters for movies and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it depends on whether you like those alternate posters or not. I mean, I love those, most of the original posters, and so I would just keep them like that, which is kind of cool that you got those original ones like that.
Yeah,
that's,
I know,
really
part
cool.
Part 5 is different. It doesn't have the original one. It looks really dumb. Both of them do. Of course, the original one doesn't look that great either, but I mean, it's just his, I think it's just his masks on there, the blue things on there, and that's it. But, you know, it's just small.
I'm going to pick it up eventually, but I'm waiting for it to go on sale, which of course is probably going to bite me in the ass, because it's probably going to sell out or something. I'll bet you, and then it'll be like, the next time I'll be able to get it for is like $300, and I'm like, oh, great, cool, thanks, Scream Factory. It would be cool if down the line they sell, like, you know, like how they did with the Halloween ones, where they sold, like, the individual 10 with each individual case, and then they sold them all as, like in two, like, separate cases with, like, 5 discs in each. If they did that for the Friday the 13th, I might pick up the cheaper one if they did that, too. But, I don't know, rights and stuff, and I'm not sure what all they're planning on doing with it. If that one eventually goes on sale, I definitely will pick that up eventually, but I'm not paying $160 for it on their website. They already have it to $130 on Walmart's website, but still, I'm not paying that much for it either. Like, I'd pay like $80 or $90 for it, but I'm not spending $150 on that. I mean, it's just like, I love the Friday the 13th franchise. It's waned on me over the years, of course, like I said previously, but it's still like, you know, that like classic ultimate horror movie, you know, just one to pick up. And of course, Scream Factory being Scream Factory, I'm definitely going to have to pick it up.
Yeah.
But they do have their sale now going on, and I picked up some for pretty cheap. I did pick up April Fool's Day.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, that one's on sale for pretty cheap.
I want to check that one out again. I haven't seen that one in a long time. I really liked it the first time.
Yeah. I recently sold my collection, you know, the double pack for pretty yeah. expensive on eBay.
Yeah, I know.
So.
That one's pretty expensive.
Yeah. And then I did pick up My Bloody Valentine, too. So I picked up both of those ones. And then I did pick up Idle Hands. That one's also pretty cheap. And then I'm glad I held off on that because I was just going to buy it from, like, just single from Walmart. It was, like, $26. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I'll pick it up. And then I got it for, like, you know, 30% off from that price. So that's really cool. And then I did pick up probably the best movie of all of them, 13 Ghosts. Can't wait to watch that. That one's my most anticipated one to get in, funny thing enough. It was on today, and I was like, well, I'll watch it later. So I was tempted to get it, but yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I was tempted to pick up 13 or Ghost Ship as well because I've been really itching to watch that movie, and just every time I see it, I'm like, man, that's such a cool. But I'm just gonna hold off for right now. I might pick it up here soon as well if they, you know. That was the other thing too, is like Candyman was on sale for like $8, so I mean it was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
There were some that were like really cheap too, like I think a couple of the older ones that were 80 slashers were like really cheap, like to like $12 and something, like I think Hell Knight might have been. I think the sale's over now. By the time you guys hear this, it might be about over, but they still haven't shipped it. I ordered it about a week ago, so you know. I'm going to eventually probably order Ghost Ship, especially by Christmas, and hopefully that poster's still available. I really have a liking for that movie. I know a lot of people are like, you know, to me, like, that movie's always got that eeriness. It's got a, like, it still has a little bit of that 13 Ghosts vibe where it's not really that scary. It's the same director as 13 Ghosts. We do need to do those movies, like, both of those movies. I want to see if you come around, because you never watched Ghost Ship, so no. I'm wanting to see how you feel about that movie. Because, again, I find it very eerie and atmospheric. And then I want to hear if you come around on your thoughts on 13 Ghosts or not, see if you actually like it. Because it does have a really cool vibe to it, but, like, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just one that you just don't like. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So we'll have to do that, like, as, like, a double show or something one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, yeah, I'm pretty stoked to get in both of those. Yeah, Ghost Ship was on the other day, and I was catching some of it. And I was like, man, this is just, I just really like this movie. Like, there's just certain parts of it. Like, it's obviously not a great character movie or something. It's more of one that you just watch for, like, the atmosphere. It's got a decent story to it, but, like, it's just, it's a ghost ship. So, it's like, that's, you know, it's not, like, you know, amazing story or anything like that. But it's, like, you know, it's not, like, very deep story or anything. But it's pretty cool nonetheless. There's actually some really great actors in the movie, too. But anyways, that's about it for that. I have that. I do have one news for that we still haven't talked about since. Well, in August, on August 22nd, actually, we got the trailer for both Batman and the Snyder Cut of Justice League for DC Fandom. And you know, we could talk about those too because, I mean, obviously those are two very dark movies.
Isn't Batman been pushed back till 2022?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I mean, both those trailers got me super hyped for both movies.
Yeah.
Originally, Batman was my most anticipated movie for next year, because...
Yeah.
I mean, Robert Pattinson said three words in the trailer, I'm just like, yes. You
yeah.
are Batman. But, yeah, that looks probably... Well, definitely looks like the darkest Batman movie yet.
Yeah.
It looks really like a murder mystery, like really... dark, kind of eerie type movie,
yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and like I told you, I wouldn't be surprised if it's rated R.
Yeah.
I just think it's probably going for that. I mean, it looks pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Like, there's some, like, death scenes in there where I'm like, man, if that's PG-13, that's very much pushing.
Yeah,
and with
pushing.
The tone,
yeah.
I just can't see it being a PG-13 movie. But I don't know, maybe it will be. Maybe it'll just be, you know, one of those is just an incredibly brutal PG-13 movie, but, like, no cussing or something like that, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, it just looks awesome. Like, the whole thing with, like, you know, this is, like, a year, basically Batman year two, essentially. Like,
yeah,
this
early
is
on, yeah.
Very early. He's not even established a whole lot yet. And, like, it's good. The inspiration for it is Batman Year One along with Batman the Long Halloween comic book. And the Long Halloween is a very interesting comic book for him to take inspiration from. Because literally every single villain that he has ever had is in the Long Halloween. So
it looks similar to the new one, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. Like, if they're going to have, like, a, you know, like, it be a trilogy, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how many they bring in. You know, is it going to be as epic as, like, having multiple villains like Spider-Man 3 or something like that? I mean, it's going to... It'll be like the Joker will get killed off, and it'll only be in the third act to get killed off right away.
Is Robert Pattinson going to dance? Is Batman going to dance?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Sam Raimi directing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one I'm just super stoked for. And then, of course, obviously, the Snyder Cut, you know, I'm like... beyond.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, the trailer, I mean, it's just a little teaser trailer, but it was really well put together, and it's just, like, I've heard other people say, it's just really cool that a movie like this exists, you know, like, it's just so cool that something like that can happen these days, where a movie like that can come out, and, yeah, I'd say both movies have 10 out of 10 potential. To them.
Yeah,
they
really
do.
And with the by the way, before I forget too, with the Batman, there's been like there's been set photos, and this is kind of cool that these are leakings, because it kind of gets us. Like, I don't want to hear spoilers about what's going to take place with it, but we saw like there's like costumes of Wonder Woman and Superman in it. So there's like they're like, is it like a like, is Superman, are they, like, are they real in this universe, or do they exist in this universe, or, like, are they going to be actual characters? Is this going to be, like, a new multiverse, or is that just, like, a reference to their characters? Nobody knows, and it's kind of cool just to speculate, just to wonder, like, oh, what's going on? Is it just these people that just dress up, like, a wink and a nod to other characters, or is it, like, they're actually going to reference those characters, like, they actually exist in this world? Like, we'll see, like, Superman and Metropolis stories on TV or something like that. That would be, either way, that's kind of cool, and if they do something else, it's kind of cool to just really wonder, like, let your mind go, like, well, what are they going to do there? It's just really, really kind of interesting.
Yeah, DC has a ton of cool shit coming out in the next couple of years. Just a lot of things I'm looking forward to.
There's supposed to be a Harley Quinn sequel coming out, too. That's getting... Yeah,
even new Suicide Squad, James Gunn has John Cena in it, so I don't know, but
dude, John Cena looks badass in that movie.
He
looks awesome.
He looks cool. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. I mean, I imagine it's gonna be an upgrade from the original,
the theatrical
one. Yeah. But yeah, that's the new Flash movie. New Wonder Woman movie looks cool. Eventually when we get a new Aquaman movie, a new Superman, dude plays Superman's returning.
Yeah, they don't know what exactly they're going to do plan-wise for him. Like, they're probably waiting until the Snyder Cut comes out to see how the feedback is. And that's what their speculation is, too, of, like, they're probably waiting to see what the Snyder Cut, how the Snyder Cut does, and, like, you know, money-wise, and how many views it gets, and everything like that.
It's gonna get views.
Oh, yeah. I will contribute many, many views to that.
We'll somehow watch it 10 times on the first day. It'll take 40 hours, but, I mean, it'll...
Well, that's the thing. They're definitely releasing it episodically. It's gonna come out, like, one episode per week. So that's gonna be interesting to, like, be like, oh, man, I'm probably going to do, like, a review of it each week and just be like, oh, man, this episode.
I'll be watching it, too, so.
Yeah, yeah. And I just am like, I wonder, like, that's going to be really interesting, because that's way different than what, you know, obviously his movies, like, you could, like, break them up into segments, but, like, they're not organically broken up. But, like, these are going to have, like, cliffhangers and stuff in it, and of, like, So, like, I'm wondering, originally Darkseid was in the first Justice League, towards the end, was supposed to kill Lois Lane. So I'm wondering if we're going to actually see that, because basically they just gave him $70 million and said, make your movie, and they gave him room. He's doing reshoots for it right now, actually, as we speak. He's doing it in another, can't remember what country he's doing it in, and they're doing it in L.A. too. And so I'm like, whoa, I wonder what exactly we're going to get, because this is still even different than he originally envisioned it. Like, he's going to add some more things in there and take some things away. So I'm really curious to see, to speculate what's actually going to be in there, because I mean, we've seen some like most of the shots that we got in there was finished footage of the photos that he showed us over the years. Like, the first photo he ever shared, I believe, was one where he shared Darkseid, that Darkseid image from the teaser trailer that we did with the Wonder Woman discovering him down in the cave. Mm-hmm. Like, that one was a badass scene, and that was just really cool. And then one of the other ones early shared in early 2019 is what he shared, was that Uxas one where he's fighting in the battle. So that was in the same one that they finished that shot as well. And then there's a lot of the footage that we saw, though, was pre-Viz at the time that he got the go-ahead to do the movie, and now they finished a lot of these shots. You know, the one where Cyborg was, you know, going towards Silas, and, you know, he's got that tear coming down, and then Silas is, you know, basically Rorschach moment. And then, so that's really interesting. There's a lot of cool things in the trailer, too. Like, you know, obviously, right there, we know we got the original Steppenwolf design, so he looks badass, man. Like, that's beyond a dream come true for me. Is like, we're finally going to get to see that Steppenwolf look. I mean, it's just gonna be like, we're gonna look at that, we're gonna look at the theatrical one, and then look at that Steppenwolf, and look at the movie, and be like, ha ha ha, that's funny. And then just look at how badass this one's gonna look like, and just, oh man, it's awesome. I'm just gonna be happy to see, like, Ben Affleck's Batman actually get, like, a really cool arc now, and Superman, and of course Cyborg was the most cut out of the movie, and we're gonna get a whole, as you see there in the first Hallelujah, which that was really cool, that throwback to Watchmen of like the Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. And, you know, he does that, you know, the leaping with the football scene. It's gonna show his start where he, you know, before his crash, he gets into a car crash, that's Cyborg's origin, and he basically dies, and that's how Silas brings him back, is through the mother boxes. So his connection with the mother boxes and to Steppenwolf and to Darkseid is going to be very fascinating to see, and I know Snyder's going to do that, like, just perfectly, how there's going to be, like, this very dark connection with him. Like, he's going to be connected to them, and it's going to be, like, a draw to the Darkseid for him. So it's going to be, like, him retaining, like, his humanity. And then you see that scene, to me, the scene that I like, teared up when I first saw it, is when he says, the whole second verse of Hallelujah is, like, in the trailers, all, like, it's paralleling in the trailer itself, like, what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I did my best, it wasn't much. It shows Cyborg beating the ground of somebody's graveyard. Is it, whether it's his own or whether it's his father's or his mother's, I don't know which one it's going to be, but either way, that just looks heartbreaking. Like, you see, like, how, like, viscerally emotional he's reacting. It just really looks like that. Like, obviously, that's my favorite thing about Snyder's, is like that, like, honest human stuff that he does in his movies is just so awesome. And then I told the truth, I didn't come to fool you, and that was when Aquaman is throwing down the trident and backing up into the water, which is at the very end, that's going to lead right into Aquaman, the part that leads into Aquaman, when he's probably being like, yeah, I just did this to stop Steppenwolf, and I'm done, I don't want anything to do with this, you know, the throne and anything, and he just backs up, and that's where she's, Amber Heard's left looking, you know, very distraught. So that's going to be perfect to, like, watch that, then watch Aquaman to see how those perfectly, you know, go into one another. That's really cool. Going to be really cool to see, like, how that works out, too. Because that was what James Wan did. James Wan went to Zack Snyder, and that's how they developed the script, was it was going off of the Snyder Cut and not the theatrical Justice League. Like, they went by what the Snyder Cut's ending was, and then they're going off of that from mm-hmm. their story of Aquaman. So that's going to be really awesome to see. And just, I just, there's so much about the movie that I'm just obviously stoked for. I'm stoked to see a live-action Darkseid, we've heard Ray Porter's voice too as Darkseid already before, because it's a he's already spoken like that before, and it's really cool, and I love it. I'm all for it. It's just everything about it. I'm just obviously beyond stoked to see the black suit Superman too. Just mm-hmm. and I'm so excited to see the original scene of his like rebirth, and like how Lois like nurses him back to his own humanity. And then that's going to be even more heartbreaking if we get the sequels. And Snyder was actually honest when it was at Justice Con over the summer in July, when he said they didn't tell him whether or not they had planned on to do more. I assume that since they greenlit this, they're open to doing more, but they're probably waiting to see how that does, because mm-hmm. then they could just do it like season 2 and 3 of his Justice League, and then yeah. they can do the extra parts 2 and 3 as like seasons, just like this one's going to be like a mini series season. So like that's going to be, I'm just really excited to see how it ends too, because we know that he's shown photos of Wonder Woman cuts off Steppenwolf's head. So that's what happens at the end with Steppenwolf. But what's going to happen with Darkseid at the end? Because we know that Darkseid is going to be... is the big baddie of the DC Universe. He's the Thanos of the DC Universe. And also... I cannot remember... I'm blanking on his name now. The second in command on Apocalypse was in the trailer, too. So that's going to be really cool to see how they play out in the sequels and stuff. Basically, what I've heard is that it's probably... It was originally supposed to play out very similar to how the Avengers movies played out, but Snyder had already developed it before that, and then that's just... There's been a lot of conspiracies of whether or not Marvel copied. Probably not, but it's like, because all the comics are very similar anyways mm-hmm. with storylines like that. But, because like the Infinity Saga, I've read the comics, it's the exact same way as what the Snyder had planned and what the movies I've heard did. So it's not like they're copying or anything like that. It's more just like, you know, that's kind of the way. But part 2 was supposed to take place all on Apocalypse on different Earths, so that they were gonna fight there. They were gonna lose, and the world was gonna be taken over, which is where you see in the nightmare sequence with Batman mm-hmm. is that you see a Omega symbol on Earth where all of not Metropolis, but Gotham is just obliterated, and there's this new Earth taken over by, you know, Darkseid and the Apocalypse, and by Superman turned evil, of course. So that's going to be interesting to see if we ever get to see that part play out mm-hmm. with the nightmare sequence, because we did see a nightmare sequence, like a larger nightmare sequence at the very beginning of the Snyder Cut of the trailer of Justice League. So that's going to be really cool, and there's speculation that we're going to see Jared Leto's Joker in the Snyder Cut, it would be Chapter 3, team up with Batman, so that would be really fascinating to see, too.
Mm-hmm.
It would be curious to see David Ayer's actual cut of Suicide Squad first, that way we could see the relationship that was supposed to develop, because, I mean, Snyder was very... he was very close in contact with Ayer and developing their, you know, that whole thing, because it was a whole universe, and we'll see if that's going, like, I just get curious to see, like, that relationship, and then to see how that's portrayed then in the Snyder's versions. It's going to be really interesting. I'm fascinated to see that.
It'll probably be the second best miniseries ever behind The Shining. I imagine. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah.
That's all I got. I could go on, to be honest. No, I could go on, to be honest, but
But yeah, that's enough of that. We are in October. It is Halloween.
We are, and it is Halloween. Yes.
Yeah, well, not Halloween yet, but
it's 31 days of Halloween.
Yeah, pretty much. I've been doing a lot of movie watching, of course.
Oh yeah, I have too, if you can imagine.
Yeah. Probably just H2O over and over again.
I've only watched that 3 times this month.
Wow, only. I've been watching ones that I've only seen like once before, or like newer ones. Like I checked out the director's cut of Dr. Sleep, which I like better.
Of course.
I watched The Lighthouse again. I absolutely adore that movie now. It's just like the perfect movie to watch from this time of year. Just the black and white, spooky, eerie atmosphere. Just perfect.
Yeah.
Again, Robin Pattinson. Great job. Invisible Man, the newest one. I watched that again. Mm. Think of other stuff. Watched the Evil Dead movies. The first three, at least. Watched couple of the Halloween movies. I never watch all of them. Every season I'll pick which ones. Like one year I watched like producer's cut of 6, next year I'll watch the theatrical cut, and then
I watch them back to back.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to watch them back to back just to see like, you know, how different it is, cuz it's kind of interesting to be like, even the score is so vastly different.
Yeah, I mean, two very polar opposite feeling movies.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it's like, and they're only like 7 minutes apart, and
yeah,
it's just way different.
Yeah, I mean, the producer's cut feels more like a Halloween movie.
Oh, yeah.
The theatrical one feels more different and darker.
Oh, yeah, it feels very, very, very dark.
Yeah, so that's why I've always liked 6, because it's... You know, it's just, it's different from the rest of them. I mean, The Thorn, you can take or leave that, but the actual
I like the idea of it, just, of course, we discussed those ad nauseum, but, like, you know, the ending.
both endings are terrible. But yeah, that's it for that.
Not like H2O, though.
Yeah, H2O is just 10 out of 10 movie.
Indeed. Indeed.
Well,
the ending, for sure.
Yeah. It would be. It should be, I guess. trying to think. I've watched some movies from the 1920s. I've delved into that a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because I watched, a couple YouTubers do, like, their favorite horror movies by decade. And they started from the 20s and went up to modern times. It just made me think. I was just like, you know, some of these I thought I would like to actually check out. So I watched Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I almost said the Doctor of Cabinet Caligari.
Yeah.
That was an interesting movie. I heard someone. It's obviously a lot of time is referenced as like the first true horror movie. I don't know if that's true. But definitely a very influential movie, especially visually. Like I can tell, you know, it's way ahead of its time in that. Just, you know, not one. It's a silent movie, so not one I'll, you know, revisit anytime soon.
Watch it once a month.
Nosferatu, though, I do really like that movie. Mm-hmm. Like it's my favorite version of Dracula. Just so. Like, if you see that thing walking towards you in the dark alley, you just take off. Like,
yeah.
It is just so creepy. It's definitely my favorite. I was going to say it's my favorite silent movie. I've only seen that in Caligari.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do really enjoy that movie. And it's a good one to watch around this time. It is just very eerie and creepy. It's great. Yeah, other than that, just watching other stuff here and there.
Yeah, I've went through, like, halfway through the Halloween franchise for my second time. I get through the entire franchise 3 times in October, and then obviously my favorites, 1, 2, and H2O, get watched on Halloween. That's my final Halloween movies. The other one that I get added to, that got added to the collection last year, or to the tradition last year, should I say, is Trick or Treat, which is what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah.
Because when there's trick or treating going on, I have that on in the background, just as like just a really cool, like, it's, as we're going to talk about, it's the perfect Halloween movie. It's the most Halloween vibe. It's got, it's just everything you want about Halloween, and everything you love about Halloween is there.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, that's like my, that's got added because like it's perfect. So like I do the trick or treating for that hour and 20 minutes that the movie takes to finish. And then I go down to Crawford School of Terror, then pick up that stuff from Domino's, and then obviously I go watch 1, 2, and H2O, and that's my the end of Halloween, and that's the perfect end to Halloween. And I get, I'm gonna have a, holy shit, am I gonna have a busy day this year, because we got that, you know, we're doing the, you guys are doing the movie thing, which I'm gonna come out for after I eat my lunch at the paint room, you know, do my usual thing there. Chardonnay, you know. I forgot to bring my Chardonnay to do this with.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
I should have at least tried it. I heard it's not good. But
it's not. It's not. And trust me, guys, if you think like I do it because I like it, no, I don't like the taste of Chardonnay at all, but it's just because...
pretty much everybody say it's not good.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you like dry stuff, like there are people who do like that taste. It's an acquired taste, but some people just naturally like bitter, more dry things. And I know a lot of people, I know Scotty does, he loves dry things, so I mean, he likes the taste of Chardonnay, but I don't. I just do it that one time per year, because it's that tradition.
Because of the one scene in Halloween H2O.
Yep, and it's funny because of how, like, widely known it is, people know that I do it, because every time I post about it, somebody tells me to have a glass of Chardonnay on them or something like that. It's so funny how people, like... It's just, like, common knowledge now that people know that I do that. Yeah, and then I'm going to go out there, and I got to come back to do trick-or-treating, and then I've got to go to Crawford School of Terror, and then I got to go to Domino's, and I got to go to watch 1, 2, and H2O. So that's going to be a busy, busy day.
Yeah.
I already requested off for it from work, so that's, like, the one day of the year I'm like, you will not make me work. I'll work Christmas, but you will not make me work on Halloween.
Yes. By the way, I forgot to say this in our last MVM episode. I don't know why, but we are on a new network now. We are on the Dark Discussions Network. So, thanks to Philip for letting us join. We'll be that's a cool thing. So we don't have to worry about finding a new place. That was like, oh, wow.
Well, yeah, and thanks for Julifilia. That was, it was such an amazing run, and it was such an amazing time, because they're just like, especially like 2017, 18, and most of 19 too, like everybody was going, there were so many podcasts, and we were getting many new podcasts and talking to a lot of different new people. It was such a great way to meet everybody. I mean, we got to meet, you know, people from all the different podcasts and stuff. Joey, we had so many people guest on our episodes shows because of that. And I know a lot of them are switching over now to Dark Discussions too. So it's glad that we still kind of keep that same family going anyway. So I'm really glad to hear that too.
Yeah, it just sucks that Neil's with us too.
A while.
That's the only downfall. Yeah, anyways, that's that. So just, it should still be at the same place. You'll be able to find us. It's not on horrorphilia.com anymore. Just be on darkdiscussions.com. Be able to find us and all the other podcasts. That's that. And I think we're ready to finally get into our main reviews.
Yep.
We have a tradition. We pick, you know, always do a Halloween episode. That's not the Halloween franchise. We pick, you know, two other Halloween-ish type movies. We did Tell Us Some Halloween in the Barn. We did the zombie Halloween movies last year, I believe.
I think that was 2 years ago, because we did... I know we did Night of the Demons.
Oh, yeah, we did do the Night of the Demons franchise. That might be Christmas. Yeah. I don't know. We did a bunch of Halloween-ish movies. Last year we did Hell Night and Idle Hands.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, how could we forget?
So we must have done two episodes there for a while.
Yeah, we've done two, yeah. But,
How could I forget about Idle Hands, man?
Yeah, of course. And, of course, the ones we're talking about today, of course, we mentioned one of them, Trick or Treat from 2007, and also Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark from 2019.
Yep. Yeah, so...
I believe we did talk about Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark last Halloween. We didn't do a full-on review for it, though.
Yeah. So. And then we had... We obviously talked about it for our year-end show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know... I think it was like 20 or something on my top 30 of the decade, so...
I think it was only in the teens on my one from list from last year, but we'll see if that's changed or not on that one. But first of all, we gotta talk about a little movie called Trick or Treat.
Yes.
From 2007, was now, you know, pretty much widely considered the best horror anthology ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to even say for a synopsis for this movie. It's just an anthology movie on Halloween. And
there's four different tales.
Yeah.
And they're all connected through this one character named Sam, which is that little thing with the mask and the thing.
Which is really cool, because you see Sam, like, everywhere now. Like, you see, like, a bunch of different stores of, like, Sam outfits. And I don't know that Trick or Treat is as... widely known as it should be.
Well, that's the thing. So that's an interesting story about this movie in general, is that it got a big... I think it has like a $10 million budget. Mm. And you can tell, I mean, this movie is... Michael Dougherty directed it, and it's very wide in scope. It has like, as far as production value goes, cinematography, it's awesome. It's incredible. It's incredibly well shot. The effects look incredible. I mean... There's some scenes where they were like, yeah, we did this as a drawing. And I'm like, holy shit, they did this as a drawing? Like, the scene where the bus goes down, the background is a picture. And I'm like, really? Because, like, that's incredible to me to think like that. Like, it looks that natural. And so, obviously, this is, this had a good budget to it. And what happened was, by the time that Halloween rolled around, 2007... It got shelved, and Warner Brothers didn't know what to do with it, because the execs were like, we don't know how to market this movie. Like, it's like, you know, it's an anthology movie, but, like, it's very... And they didn't know, like, what kind of, like, an audience this would get. And I honestly say I'm not entirely sure if they're wrong on that one. Because, like, this movie, like, feels like it's a love letter to horror fans, and horror fans would, like, love this movie to death, and they do. But I don't know if, apart from that, if this movie would have had much of an audience. Like, that's a thing that obviously we'll never know. But, like, since it got the direct-to-video release in 2009, so that's what they eventually ended up doing with it. And it did really well, and it's become a beloved movie by horror fans. Pretty much anybody that's watched it, I know, that really likes it. I haven't really heard a person say, oh, I didn't care for it that much or anything like that.
Cool Duder doesn't like it as much. He likes Christmas Horror Story more.
I see, that one, to me, I'm not bothered by that, because I love a Christmas Horror Story.
It's
so
good, yeah.
This is number... Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was number 21 on my top 15 of 2010s, and I'm going to see where...
Speaking of top of the decades, Trick or Treat was my number one of the 2000s.
And, yeah, I forgot about it.
Yeah, I do remember you forgot about it. You were like, oh, that will definitely made my list. It's like you forgot about Tales from the Hood when we did our top 50. Like, how could you forget about Tales from the Hood?
Like, it happens, man. Yeah. It's just like I look over my... thing, and if I don't see it, if it doesn't pop to my eye, I'm like, okay. But so that's the interesting thing with this movie, is like, it definitely would have made its money back. I know that for sure. But beyond that, would it have made 20 million? Probably. Would it have made like 50 million? I'm not 100% sure. I mean, it depends on if it was like huge good word of mouth. I mean, I don't know, like, how general audiences would have thought about this movie. I'm just not 100% sure, because I would have been thought for sure, like, general audiences would have loved certain movies. To me, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, I would have thought for sure would have made, like, $150 million easily.
Yeah,
but it didn't. I mean, it made solid money. It made, like, $80 million. But it didn't, like, take off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing with, like, Happy Death Day to You. Like, that movie, I thought for sure was a shoo-in to, like, make a lot of money. But it didn't. It made, like, $30 million. So, I mean, it was just, like, it's just one of those things where it's, like, you know, sometimes some of these movies are, like, you know, like, you think, like, oh, yeah, the people couldn't help but love this movie. Like, The Shining and Dr. Sleep. Like, those movies are both, like, awesome movies. And, like, you know... Obviously, The Shining is more of an art house movie, so I can understand. But like even then, I think the audience score was like a D+,
yeah.
And the critic score was about the same. I remember it's about the same as Batman vs. Superman. That's a 28, and I believe it's like a 32 or a 34 or something for The Shining. So it's obviously very low too, which of course is the exact opposite that everybody just knows now. It's like, oh yeah, that one's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
But like then it was like people hated it. So it's like it's interesting to speculate of, like, would people have hated Trick or Treat, or would it have caught on? Would people have really got the really
yeah,
what it was going
it,
for?
I don't know, because I, you know, again, it did come out, it would have came out in 2007.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, a different kind of time back then.
Yeah, Rob Zombie's Halloween came out in August of that year, so
yeah.
It's like, you know.
So, I mean, competing against that, it probably wouldn't have
yeah.
done very well.
And 2009, of course, no contest. You got Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, so.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I don't know. I think if it would come out today, I think it would be a hit. But back then, I don't know, because again...
Yeah.
This
would be one of those movies that if it were to drop on Netflix today, that would be, like, everybody would be talking about it right now.
Yeah.
Like, if it were to drop right now, like, today...
It'd be one of those ones where it'd be, like, Netflix would say, oh, it's one of the best horror movies ever. And you'd be like, oh, go out and I'd watch and be like, oh, it actually is.
I would hope...
One time that would happen.
I would hope that Netflix would just shut up about that one because, like, it might be one of those ones like Terrifier, though, where it just, like, blows up because it's just, like, everybody's talking about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, this one, I think, for sure, is just one of those where, like... You know, if it was seen by a more wider audience, I think more people would really like it. I wonder, has our mom watched this movie?
No.
Oh, man, you gotta see it, show it to her and see if she likes it.
I doubt it. Anything that isn't a killer or ghost, she doesn't like.
Well, it is a ghost. Sam's a ghost.
I guess.
Sam does kill, too.
He's a pumpkin demon thing.
Yeah, no, he's the spirit of Halloween.
He is.
He's literally the spirit of Halloween.
Yeah.
So it's, like, in manifested form. So it's... That's awesome, and honestly, this, I can't remember which one came out first. I wanted to check before I left, and I wanted to bring it. I have the Trick or Treat comic book, which is my second favorite comic book ever. Like, Dark Knight Returns is my favorite, and then this is my second, because, like, it has, like, it's just, like, I read it, and I'm just like, man, it's heartbreaking. Some stories, like, they have different eras of stories in this, too,
mm-hmm.
which makes it so awesome. They have one set in the Middle Ages during, like, the persecution of witches, and there's a witch who was, you know, doing all these spells and stuff, and she's, like, being persecuted and stuff, and it's, you know... It's like a great critique on like that style of Christianity of like that like you know demonic of like you
mm-hmm.
know pagans and stuff like that are like demonic and stuff like that and like they literally like following the Malleus Maleficarum from Kramer of you know actually killing witches and it's really awesome. It's a heartbreaking ending too. It's really, really well done storytelling. It's Doherty does the writing for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have one that's set during like early settlers, like pilgrim times from the United States. And it's like that first meeting between like pilgrims and Native Americans. And that one also, it has a really tragic ending, but also has a really cool ending as well. Like it's, that one is awesome too. And then there's two, like, modern-day ones as well, and those ones are both absolutely awesome. And Sam is also in those ones, obviously, too. And it's – that's, like, that comic book, you read it, and it's just – again, it's like these, like, four more just insanely awesome stories that are just really, really – the fourth one is just, like, a lot of fun because there's just a lot of, like, monsters and ghouls and goblins, like, running around killing people in this little town and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. But, like, yeah, this one has... This one is a unique one, and obviously A Christmas Horror Story mimicked this, and I don't know, there probably are other ones that did as well. Of this one does stories where normal anthologies are like one story,
yeah,
and then you skip to the next story, and then the third one, and then the fourth one. This one skips around with all the stories. It tells them interminglingly. So, like, you have, like, you'll see, like, 5 minutes of one, and then you'll see, like, 10 minutes of another. And, yeah, I have to agree with everybody that, like, this one does it way better, where, like, the cuts are, like, perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I was just looking at, watching that this morning, and, like, just noticing that, of, like, man, this is really well done, of, like, how they cut it here. Like, that was a perfectly emotional point of, like, if they were to cut it any sooner or any further, like, it would have felt choppy, but, like, right here was awesome. Like, you can tell that they really had that planned from the beginning of, like, we're going to do that like this, and we'll cut it here, and then we'll cut to this one, and then this will be the natural place where we cut off here. And it was really, really cool. So basically, you have, there's, you know, you have, like, this evil principal type story. You have Little Bo Peep, Little Red Riding Hood type story, which is an innocent virgin.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, that virgin tends to take on a different meaning here than the other ones. And then
we have the school bus one.
The school bus one, which is, that one's probably my favorite, to be honest. That one's just basically like local legend like type thing. That's just so cool. And then
you kind of have your wraparound. You have that, like, little beginning piece, too.
Right,
The very beginning, which is actually happens after all this takes place. So it kind of things happen kind of out of order, too.
Yep.
So,
and then you see, like, then you have the fourth one, which is basically the old grumpy man neighbor of the principal.
Yeah.
And you see an event happen at the beginning with him of, like, him getting, like, flown through the window, basically, or, like, getting tackled from, like, a far away, and you're like, oh, what happened there? And then you get to see what happens there. So it's really, really cool how they do this. And, obviously I can't remember where they cut where. I haven't seen it that much, but I do watch this movie 4 times a year as well of every Halloween, but I still don't have that good of a memory.
Yeah, this is obviously a must-watch every Halloween.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Thurman Merman's in this movie.
Absolutely.
Thurman Merman.
Bad
Santa.
Which is, again, another must-watch movie for that holiday.
Absolutely, Thurman Merman's in this. He's involved in the principal story.
You get the beginning of, like, you have, like, this couple, the wife is, like, all, like, oh, screw these traditions and stuff, and then, of course, you get Sam to see that, and he's like, oh, no, can't have this happen. So then, of course, you get, she gets jump scared, and she gets,
That jump scare is done brilliantly, because
it's great, it's out of nowhere.
Yeah, you just, you know, she's pulling down the sheets, you're just, even every time I watch it, I forget how it's done. I think I know when it happens. She pulls down a sheet, and then there's nothing there, and then he just flies up out of nowhere. That's done great. And then, like, when the husband comes out and sees her, it's just so brutal.
Yeah.
She's, like, decapitated. And
I often wonder, because it says, I can't remember what it says on their porn tape, but then I wonder if that's supposed to be them, or if it's supposed to be somebody else, but they're just watching. I just, like, there's so many questions about that. I'm like, why? What is it, like... And they don't really say anything about it. He's just like, he just gives her that look, and she's like, go put on the tape.
Yeah.
It's just like, but that's really fun. And then he falls asleep. How do you fall
asleep?
How do you fall? You got a porn tape in. How are you falling asleep to this thing?
I guess it's like people that fall asleep during sex.
Oh, God, I can never imagine that either.
It's a great way to open the movie. I love the music to this movie too, the music that plays during that. And I love the comic book panels and stuff like that you get for the credits. It's just great. And then I think the first kind of story we lean into is
the principal.
The principal.
Thurman Merman.
Yeah, with Thurman Merman, he kills Thurman Merman.
Well, he does a razor blade in the candy.
Yeah,
which
he does. And I think we have a ghost in the house.
Yeah, we do have a ghost.
Knocked down a chair next to us. That's never happened. I don't know why that happened, but it's going to continue.
Yeah.
Quiet down, Toby.
Well, Toby's in human form now, so. Don't forget.
Anyways, he puts the razor blade and
local urban legend type stuff of Christmas.
It happens, Halloween. But you know
it does. But it's more like an urban legend that actually comes true every once in a while thing of like that's like everybody's story of like did you hear about that person?
Who the hell has time to put razor blades in candy? Honestly, like.
Or even apples. How do you hide that either? How does that get hidden?
Like, it's just an evil thing to do, but also you're just a complete loser because you have time to put razor blades in candy. Like, okay. But, he starts puking up blood, and he's trying to bury him. The old grumpy neighbor comes and almost sees him, and the little annoying son's up there. Help me carve a jack-o'-lantern! Help me with the eyes!
We carved the jack-o'-lanterns.
Yeah.
You have to be quiet.
Danny, I wish mommy was still alive.
Yeah. He's like, after we watch Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown's an asshole! Billy Wilkins language.
Yeah, it's probably the weakest story, but like it's still hilarious.
It's
much
fun.
It's great.
And then like the end where you know, I watched this with friends too, where like, he killed his own kid, and then it just pans out and like don't to help me with the eyes, and it's like he just stabbed the Thurman Merman's head on
it's a fantastic end to the story, but we're not done with the Wilkins, absolutely not. We'll see him a little bit later. We get that, and then I think we do get a little bit of the Red Riding Hood story, with them changing and the little kid looking through the... There are children out here.
It's like, okay, what do you want me to do about it? Like, what difference, like... Get your kid away from the thing, then.
Yeah, I guess it was the way they were talking. They were basically talking about getting laid. And...
Oh, yeah, they were, but, like, the fact is that she had a kid. She let her kid go by the dressing room. What the hell do you think? He's peeping. He's a peeping Tom, so what do you want? She's not yelling at her kid for peeping?
Yeah. that, and, you know, they're talking about, you know, this is going to be my first time.
It is. Yeah. Which, of course, it's such a great turnaround to the whole time you're thinking, like, virgin and, like, sex and stuff
This is my favorite story just because of how how well it's done, and the ending is one of my favorite scenes in horror history. I love it.
I've really come around on it. I used to think it was, like, but I really love it. Like, I love the whole setup and that you know the ending, and, like, it's like a wink when you go back and watch it, and it's, like... It's very cleverly done.
Yeah, so they're all these girls are getting together and they're going to this Halloween parade. They're trying to pick up dudes who, you know, were thinking they're all going to go somewhere and bang, basically. And their girl dresses Little Red Riding Hood. She's kind of nervous. She's shy. She's a virgin. They go to the parade. They start picking up on dudes, and the other girls kind of leave Red Riding Hood behind, and they go to the location so she can find somebody.
Which they find somebody for.
Yeah. He's a real winner. Which,
I don't know what difference it makes, though, at this point. Does attractiveness make a difference?
I guess when they want it to be their first time, maybe they want it to be someone memorable and not some loser, I guess. I mean, that would have been memorable.
Yeah.
Like, who would forget...
Diaper kid.
Diaper dude, yeah. I love the whole Halloween parade, too. It's just very festive. This whole movie, like we said, just bleeds Halloween. Just like Krampus, directed by the same guy, bleeds Christmas. This is even more so, bleeds Halloween.
Oh, yeah, like every shot.
Yeah, it just has jack-o'-lanterns everywhere, leaves falling, just perfect Halloween. I mean, like my brother said, you know, we all, you know, Halloween is obviously the most classic movie everybody watches around Halloween, but if you want something that feels like Halloween, this is the movie for you, and the best movie out there. They go to the parade, she starts walking, we start seeing this cloaked figure kind of stalking her, and we see him assault some chick, Biter, and we see him... we see her walking alone, and she's being stalked by the guy, and he pops
Michael
out.
Myers, we'll
yeah,
just say.
Basically. Not really. Pops out, and, you know...
Dracula.
Yeah, it's Dracula. Pops out and bites her, and...
Oh, man.
After that, we learn what happens. We see all the, I love the dialogue, too, the very subtle dialogue. She's always been the runt of the litter.
Yeah.
Yeah, just very... It doesn't, like, ever, like, go out and say that this is what's going to happen, but it just gives you little...
Yeah, hints,
little dialogue, and I love the dialogue and stuff like that, and we see the cloak clear come flying from the trees.
Obvious dummy, too, and it's funny because he falls from, like, 30 feet, and then they pull off the cape, and he's just, like, fine. He's, like, he's just, like, scared. I'm like, well
yeah,
okay.
I guess he can't move because he just lays there. He probably has...
Right, but he would definitely not be conscious if he fell out of a tree and hit
him. Oh, no, worry. I guess she just flings him. I don't know, but, yeah,
well, you hear the trees crackling, so yeah, maybe she was up in the trees and, like, dropped them. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, it
like,
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't.
He just comes flying, and it gets revealed it's the evil principal.
Yeah.
From the first story. And obviously, this is you know, later in the movie. This isn't...
Well, yeah, this couldn't be much earlier in the movie.
Yeah, it's much later in the movie, so it's kind of cool to see what happens to this dude way earlier in the movie. It ends up happening to him, so I guess... And they also talk about, in the first story, he's like, can I come to Halloween parade with you? No!
Daddy has a date.
Yeah, so... And then they need to, you know, shit around, and all the guys that were there, they're all dead.
Yep.
And then all the chicks start dancing, and start transforming, and they transform into werewolves.
Yep.
And they start... And like I said, that is one of my favorite scenes in horror history. Just one of the best reveals. Just the sweet things are made of these two.
Yeah.
Marilyn Manson version playing. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a redone version. It's not Marilyn Manson.
I know it's not Marilyn Manson.
I can't remember
it's
who
in
it is.
Same style.
It's the same. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the singers, but yeah, it's an awesome version of it too.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. And yeah, everything about that reveal just so perfect.
Yeah,
just really cool.
Like, what big eyes you have! And then she just starts ripping into him.
Yeah.
It's an amazing scene. One of my favorite scenes ever. And then you hear they start howling, and it's just great. It's just perfect 10 out of 10 story for me. I absolutely adore it. I don't know the next one we can talk about. I guess would have to be the school bus.
Yeah.
Which
that one actually wraps up before
this
the werewolf
one does,
but
yeah.
you get most of the story before the werewolf one, so that's
So the school bus one is these kids, you're trick or treating, and they pick up this weird kid, and they bring her along with her, and they take her to this big pit, basically. Big canyon.
Yeah, it's like
I'm
a ledge,
sure. Yeah, it's like this big
it's like
ledge.
Off of a cliff. It reminds me of, like, Turtle Rock, basically.
Yeah.
Is essentially what... Well, obviously, none of the people listening...
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, yeah, Turtle Rock.
Basically, like, a place where people went swimming by where we live
and there's
here.
A, there's a rock shaped like a turtle in the middle. That's why they call it Turtle Rock.
Yeah. Which I did see this summer on the bike trail going up to Ohio Powell.
Yeah.
Which I recommend people do. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyways, they go to that pit, and they start telling the story of how this bus driver drove these mentally challenged kids who all their
every one of their parents
just
decided,
like, get rid of them.
Yeah, we want these kids murdered. And, yeah, no one's gonna ask questions or anything, like, where all
yeah,
these kids
all our special needs kids are dead now. What happened to them?
Tragic accident.
Yeah, so he pays the bus driver to essentially take them all and drive them off a ledge. And it kinda goes wrong, but the bus driver ends up living, and all the kids are dead. So it ends, and the bus, you know, fall down the pit, and it's rumored to still be down there, and the children are... supposed
yeah.
to haunt the bound there, and
I thought it would have been interesting too. Just this past time, I was watching it this morning. Of like, wouldn't it have been cool if one of the kids survived too? Like, just by because like the one kid got out of the
yeah.
seat. I thought it would have been cool if he would have survived too, just like as an adult, then came back for revenge or something.
Yeah,
kind of cool, but you know the way it plays out is still awesome, obviously.
Yeah.
But I thought that would have been like a cool like alternate reality take of it.
Yeah. So yeah, they tell that story, and then they go down and they take this elevator thing, lift down into there, and three of the people get on first, and we kind of see them getting, looks like they're being taken out. You see their jack-o'-lanterns being, you know, unlit and stuff like that, and, you know, we think they're being taken out, and the girl, the weird girl goes down there, and she sees a bunch of monsters, she sees one of the other kids getting his intestines ripped out, and, ends up falling and hitting her head, and it's revealed that the other kids were just playing a prank on her.
Mm-hmm.
Very elaborate prank. They got intestines for this. yeah, crazy. One of the characters is super mean. One of the characters, the taller dude, is actually sympathetic towards her. And
yeah.
Just like, you know,
they may have a little crush.
Yeah, or at least, you know, he's a nice dude. So then they...
Not wrong.
Yeah, well... They actually see the bus out there, so that's part of the story was true. The bus
yeah.
is down there. And then the pranksters get theirs because the ghost of the kids awaken and start chasing them, and they try to get out, but the weird chick is on the elevator, and she leaves them all down there. And, you kind of say good for them, but then the one kid was nice, and you're like, oh, it sucks, but she just doesn't care. She lets them all down there, and
yeah.
I like the little thing, how she's going up. You can hear them all just getting slaughtered down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're just hearing them getting ripped apart. And you also hear a wolf howl in the story, which is obviously the wolves from the werewolves in the previous story we talked about. So, again, that kind of, you kind of hear that, and then the weird chick, she just walks away, and then that's the end of that story.
Sam is pleased.
Yes, yeah, Sam is happy. He feels justice was served. And then we get our wrap-up story, I believe, with the grumpy old man who's the neighbor of the...
Mr. Wilkins,
yes. So, yeah, we see him. He just hates Halloween. You know, he scares the kids trick-or-treaters away.
What, yeah.
Yeah, he gets, he's just flicking through the channels, and he's, everything's Halloween, and he just is like, you know, starts watching the food channel.
So it made me think of, this time around, made me think of Idle Hands, whenever he keeps flipping through the channels, and the hand takes it and flips to every channel's a hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I just watched it the other day.
Everything always reverts back to Idle Hands, basically.
Right, right, exactly. The greatest Halloween movie ever.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, but like, you know, he's just, he goes out and we see the interaction he had with the Mr. Wilkins before. He goes, "Happy Halloween, screw you!" He's just very, very grumpy old man. And,
I got a double-barreled shotgun above my fireplace and an NRA membership.
Yeah.
I don't know if the NRA membership has to do with anything,
yeah.
But still.
Keep your kid out of my yard. And kids and wasn't in his yard.
Yeah.
And then he,
he's basically the Ebenezer Scrooge
for Halloween. So, he is then walking around this house, and he has... starts seeing stuff written on the walls, trick or treat written all over the walls, and then, see that, Sam pulls a Pet Cemetery on him.
Yeah.
And stabs him from underneath the bed, and then they have this whole big cat and mouse thing throughout the house,
yep.
His house, and we see what happens with him trying to call for help from Mr. Wilkins and being attacked by Sam through the window.
Yep.
I love the shot where after he gets, like, those glass in his hands and he's trying to unhook the thing.
Yeah.
You see Sam crawl on the ceiling behind him. That's just fantastic. And, yeah, they have a big fight. It's awesome. I love Sam's weapon, too. It's candy. It's a candy bar with this razor in it. And then... eventually, it's a lollipop with a...
a pumpkin lollipop,
yeah,
that's like...
super sharp, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, he ends up... We get an idle hand in this. He cuts Sam's hand off, and it It crawls around. You can say
finds Jessica Alba.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it crawls around and it pokes Sam, and he gets back up, and and he goes to attack, and obviously he just wanted a piece of candy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was more like Sam was just trying to
teach him a lesson. Yeah.
Yeah, and essentially, as Sam, I guess, knew that because he's a spirit, he's not a human. Sam knew
what was gonna happen.
He knew that this guy, what had happened and why he was the way he was. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's revealed. But towards the end of the story, he's burning pictures, and it's a picture of him with all the children on the bus. He was the bus driver from the bus story. So Sam knew he just basically needed reformed. And not necessarily that he was too far gone, like the wife in to come, but in the original story that we saw.
Yeah, I do like how, too, at the end of this story, we see, you know, the old man giving out candy, and some of the guys all bandaged up, just sling on. We see the girl, weird girl, walking home. We see the couple that got married at the beginning of the movie, the wife. We see them, they start arguing, and then Sam... You see him look, and he goes off, and then we know what happens there. And then, at the end of the movie, we see old man gets a knock on the door, opens it, and it's the children that have come for him.
Yeah.
From the bus.
From the bus.
Yeah, and they mess him up.
Which, maybe Sam also knew that was coming.
Yeah,
who
that's
knows?
What I was saying.
It's possible.
Yeah, he could have just been like, yeah, you're gone for anyways. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that ends that, and we get all these, again, awesome comic book strips of him just getting mutilated and stuff. Like, kind of reminds me of, like, Hellraiser or something like that. That's the movie. That's everything about it.
The thing that you can't really capture in a review in words is just the experience of watching it and just how much... this movie is about Halloween and how, like, of a Halloween feel you get in this movie. Like, there literally is nothing like this movie in terms of, like, Halloween atmosphere. And it's not necessarily a scary movie. In fact, I don't really think I'm scared at all in this movie. There's some creepy parts to it, sure.
Yeah, there's some.
But this movie just is such a great experience in terms of, like, just love of Halloween and just really great storytelling. I mean, these are basically just like four short stories that are just told so perfectly well. And just even the character development you get in these little short segments is just really, really very well done. I mean, this really is a great movie in general. Like, even if you just weren't, like, even if you just were to say, like, I mean, obviously, like, the Friday the 13th movies you can enjoy, like, on a guilty pleasure level, they're not good movies.
Yeah, but on a horror level, they're good.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, this
like,
if
we were to say, like, story-wise, they have no story, they're pretty bad filmmaking-wise and stuff like that. But, like, in terms of, like, this movie is, like, legitimately a very, very awesome movie. Mm-hmm. And I think both movies we're talking about tonight are really good movies in terms of, like, filmmaking. And just overall, this movie is just it truly is a must watch and like the best movie to watch for Halloween because of how it obviously to me like you have to watch a Halloween movie on Halloween too because they're literally it's in the name
it's
Halloween so like you kind of have to do that but also this movie is a must watch for the season too. I mean obviously not everybody watches it four times a year like I do but still I mean. You know, this is just one of those movies that's truly special that you have to watch. Any horror fan, it's just absolute must watch. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that one. This is required viewing.
Absolutely. So, we're ready to get into ratings on this one.
Man, this is going to be a shock.
Yeah, I'll go first. Like I said, this is my number one movie of the 2000s, from 2000 to 2009. It kind of almost got taken over by American Psycho, but I would say I still like this movie more. And honestly, this is my favorite just Halloween movie now. I like it more than the original Halloween. This is just one of my favorite all-time movies, period. I believe this was in my teens when we did our top 50 horror movies. It was like 13 or 12. This would be in my top 10 now. I have it in there. I just... everything about this movie is perfection. It really is. So it's a 10 out of 10.
Yep, I'm also a 10.
Yep. I think you forgot. Yeah, what you forgot about on your list, the 2000s.
It would have probably been number 3 or 4, is my guess. It's like Jeepers Creepers is still there.
Yeah, Jeepers Creepers
and Signs.
Signs, and then Ginger Snaps you'd probably have ahead of.
Yeah. Yeah, all three of those would definitely be, which obviously you know my ratings for all three of those. It's just like, we obviously did Signs already, so.
Yeah, we did.
But Jeepers Creepers, that's not going to be any surprise to anybody anyways. Mm-hmm. But it was also in my top 10 of all time, so.
Yeah, so.
Speaking of top, this was number 21, I believe, of the decade of this past year of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. That is up next.
Yeah, so.
Which, I guess to start, this was produced by Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
So, obviously, another Guillermo del Toro-produced movie. I don't know the director, and he hasn't really directed, I don't think, much before that. But, as far as, you know, del Toro's, you know, delves into horror a lot. You know, he directed, you know, Pan's Labyrinth, as, you know, people, you know, debate whether that's horror, and even some are, like, Shape of Water. It's definitely inspired by Creature from the Black Lagoon. But definitely not, I don't think, is a horror movie, but it's definitely inspired by a horror movie. And then, of course, you got Mama, which is probably the most famous one at this point.
Yeah, because Crimson Peak.
Crimson Peak, he had The Orphanage.
Yeah.
And Crimson Peak, he directed himself.
Yes, he did.
So, you know, but this movie, it definitely, I think, it fits very much in the realm of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it very much has that feel. Funny thing, like, how Sam Raimi's produced movies all have literally the exact same feel. They're all super serious. Lots of jump scares.
Yeah.
Like,
and his directed movies all have the same.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, exactly. And so, like, this one definitely fits in the realm of, like, Mama and The Orphanage and those movies like that where he produced them. And this is really one of those... to me, this... So, obviously, this is based on the Alvin Schwartz's... children's stories that were from the late 80s and early 90s, which...
I guess they're children's stories.
Which, they were very, very controversial for that very reason, because Stephen Gammell's... Alvin Schwartz and Stephen Gammell's artists' illustrations were very grotesque-looking, and the stories themselves are incredibly dark, and they're basically all urban legends. And some of them they took from famous stuff, like The Hook with the Hand is in there from I Know It's Your Last Summer, you know, things like that. And some of the ones you see in the movie Urban Legend is also in here, too.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you get some really cool ones, like The Thing is my all-time favorite from those ones. That one's just the most dark, that one would just probably give me nightmares. But I remember vividly, I got these from the Scholastic book, you know, you get... Every so often, Scholastic would come in when we were in elementary school, and we would get these. I don't know if everybody here has experienced the same thing when they were in elementary school, but we would get these, like, booklets that they would, like, almost like magazines, like small ones, and they would show what they were showcasing. And you could either send off for them, like, if your parents wanted to send in, like, a money order or something, they could send off, and they would ship them to the school. Like, I know the one time they randomly had this, like, it was basically you plugged it in to your phone jack. It was like a mini phone thing, and like it was like in a small circle.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like you just had it like in your ear, and you could talk, and like you just press the button, and you just dial the numbers, and it was like a phone, but it was a miniature one. I kept in my room and called Scotty, my cousin, like when we were in like fourth and fifth grade, and my parents would get on every now and then and be like, get off the phone. So, you know, it was one of those, but it, like, we did that, but, like, I remember the Scholastic book, when they would actually come in a couple times a year, I think it was twice a year that they came in, like, once in the fall, once in the spring, and I had two of them. I know I had Scary Stories and More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I never really had Scary Stories to Chill Your Bones. And so I bought all three of them a couple years ago, and I read through all three of them, and it was just really awesome. Now, they did re-release them about 10 years ago, and they did have, like, new illustrations, and I was like, fuck that, no way, I'm not doing that shit. Mm-hmm. Like, and they're, like, really tame and stuff like that, so they're, obviously, they took all that, like, and so I was like, nah, I'm going with the originals on this one. Mm-hmm. I'm not normally like that, but for this one specifically, because of how... close that is linked with my childhood, I was like, yeah, I'm buying them. And did you read them a lot?
I very vaguely remember doing it. Like, I remember, like, when it was coming out, I instantly knew the name, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Like, I recognized that. And I remember when I was getting through the book last year sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, when we watched to see the movie.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this one, yeah.
The illustrations are what you remember. Yeah, like, exactly. The ones with the eyes, the lady with the eyes out. That, like, you know, those ones, you definitely remember the illustrations for sure.
Yeah, but, yeah, I did recall it, but I don't have as much of history with him as you. But I definitely, when this movie was released last year, I was really excited for it because, you know, and I remember the trailers first came out. It looked awesome, too.
Yeah. And I was kind of curious to see, because obviously these are all just random urban legends. They're not like one story or anything. They're just like one or two pages long. And some of them are a couple lines long, and they're just like rhythms, and they're kind of like spook. They're like morbid, but they're funny at the same time, kind of things like that. They're not all like really scary or anything. Some of them are just like jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's ones where you're supposed to like tell this scary story, and you're supposed to go blah at the end. And like, you know, it's kind of like to, you know, just scare everybody to make them laugh. And it's, you know, so I was just really interested to see how like. So how are they going to translate those into a movie? Like, are they going to do an anthology style? Are they just going to tell a bunch of stories? Or are they going to tell, like, and so this one was a little bit of both. This one took, like, the same route that Goosebumps did with the, you know, the Jack Black movie from a couple years ago. And, like, basically in that movie, there's a book that has all of the Goosebumps characters in it, like all the villains and stuff. And they get unleashed into the thing. But that one took a lot. That one felt like a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that one, it's fun for what it is. And it's just cool to see those characters that you read about and watch the movies and stuff. Like, to see them on screen. But, you know, they don't hold a candle to the actual stories. Even as low budget as they were, those ones are actually, like, good. Like, this one's just, like, a kid's movie. There's not very good storytelling. It's just kind of fun, though. But this one here, you do see a lot of the characters from the illustrations. Like, of course, there's Harold the Scarecrow. Mm-hmm. You do see that woman with their eyes cut out and stuff like that throughout the movie. There's Mitai Dodie Walker in this. And, it's, you know, those are the ones. And then the large woman that walks down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh, God, we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But this one took a very, very serious approach. Like, this one, like, of course, with Del Toro, you know it's going to be something that's, like, very respectable. But I was very, very pleasantly surprised at this movie. And for the longest time, this was my number one movie of the year. Like, just got etched out by, you know, Dead Don't Die. And so it's just, like, it's really interesting of, like, man, it's to me, it's really special, and it's already being underappreciated. Like, a lot of people were like, oh yeah, I really liked that movie. It was a really cool, like, it felt like a kid's movie, and I don't really get that at all from this movie. I don't see what they see with, like, kids' movies. Like, obviously, it's got teens in it, and I can kind of tell it's more, it's PG-13, obviously.
Yes.
So it's more directed towards a teen audience, but, like, thematically and tone-wise, I don't see that at all, because this one has, it definitely pushes a PG-13 boundary. It's got some, like, grotesque imagery and stuff in it, and it's
really scary.
Very, very scary.
Like, I said when I talked about it last year, you know, this would be a great movie to introduce, like, a kid to horror movies, but man, like, this movie would probably give a kid nightmares. Like, absolutely. Like, it is pretty damn scary. Just, like, not even just saying, oh, for a PG-13 movie. Like, no, this is a scary movie. Like, I did see someone, like, post about, they were watching this. It's like, oh, I'm feeling like watching something a bit more tame. I'm like, tame maybe gore-wise, but I mean, like, scare-wise, I mean, there's really tense scenes in this movie. And, yeah, I don't know, like, I would say this would be a good passageway for
someone to watch. Oh, I'm showing my kid this when he's, like, 4 years old. I'm gonna scar this kid to death.
Yeah, I mean, this movie will probably, I mean, there's nothing too extreme in there for, you know, kids or anything. It's not like The Conjuring scary or anything, or The Exorcist, but, I mean, it is still, you know, quite scary. As my brother tries to plug something in.
I'm trying to plug in my phone.
Okay.
To charge it, because it's 1%.
Okay. But anyways, yeah, this movie, by the way, takes place in 69, I believe.
68.
The same year Night of the Living Dead came out.
1968.
This is the best movie of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, In the Heat of the Night came out that year, and that was an Academy Award winner, so that one's might be a little better. But also, I can't remember what other movie came out in 68, too, that was a horror movie, but I think Rosemary's Baby was that year, too.
Was it?
I think.
Oh, that's probably better. I don't know. I mean, not really.
No, I think Rosemary's Baby is earlier. Never mind. Let me look up horror movies from 68 so I can see.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, he kind of does have that kind of it vibe to him, like the, you know, the miniseries or the new one. You know, you got these kids. You know, they're you got the bullies. You know, it takes place on Halloween, the first night of it does anyways, and you know, they're out trick-or-treating, and, you know, they, all the kids, all the main characters gang
Rosemary's
up.
Rosemary's Baby was from 68.
All right, well, and Night of the Living Dead is the second best war movie of that year. I mean, I guess it could be argued, but,
And Dracula has risen from the grave.
Oh, well, great.
And the green slime. There's a Jekyll and Hyde that came out from this, and then there's a look at this one. Look at this, Satanic.
Yeah, this looks great.
Destroy All Monsters is from that year too.
Mm-hmm.
Batwoman. I don't know why that's in here.
So, you never know.
2001: A Space Odyssey. That's
yes,
not quite horror.
Not a horror movie at all.
Sci-fi.
Yeah.
So 1968 would be a very difficult year to have any kind of list for, because look at these movies that are from this year.
Yeah. So anyway, it's not about 68 and,
well, we are talking about 1968.
Yeah, the girl thinks Night of the Living Dead's the best movie, and
also,
I'm not gonna argue with her.
Yeah, also this movie also takes place in Pennsylvania in a small town. So
yeah,
could
it
be
does.
Here.
It could have been in Connersville, PA. Yeah, because it probably would have been a lot nicer back in the 60s.
It was. It used to have, like, we used to have a movie theater here in town.
Yeah, Connersville used to be a nice city.
Yep, and we used to have, like, a pool hall, like, right in town. Like a legit, like, nice pool hall with, like, dozens of pools, tables and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Man, what I had done if I was, what was we, like, 13, 14 years old, and I was just, like, or I was, and we were, like, I would just play pool all the time.
Yeah, I know.
That was a thing for like a year or so.
Yeah. I mean, our little smaller room that was not meant for pool at all.
Yeah. Yeah, we had it in the basement for a while, and that definitely didn't work, and then we brought it up into another room. Yeah, we did a pool thing for a while, but anyways, back to the movie.
Yeah, so we see the kids gang up when they're trick-or-treating. They throw bags of shit at the bullies, flaming bags of shit.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. And
the only thing that would have made it better is if he would have been like, oh, it's poop. He called the shit poop. That would have been a great reference.
Yeah, it would have. But, yeah, it would have, and then the bullies chase them off, and they go and hide at the person's car in a drive-in, who is watching Night of the Living Dead, of course, and, they kind of have a run-in. This kind of the kid that they're hiding in his car is kind of like this new kid, and they kind of don't know who he is. So they hide in there, and the boys kind of have a standoff with him. He's like, "Get the hell away from my car!"
Yeah, he said, "Dude, you smell like shit." Because get it? Because he got shit thrown on him.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Oh, so before they go out to be bullies and do their bully stuff, they for some reason, this kid has an unnatural hatred for his scarecrow Harold out in the thing.
He
goes eat shit Harold and just starts beating him with a bat. I'm like, why?
He just doesn't like it.
Doesn't like the scarecrow, I guess. I don't know. I just I don't understand it. I don't know. He's got some weird fetish for some scarecrows or something.
Man, maybe it used to scare him as a kid. Who knows? I mean, he's a creepy-ass looking scarecrow.
It is. I mean, it gets, you know, it is creepy there after a while.
Yeah, well, it is Harold the Scarecrow, so.
And does come alive there soon.
Yeah.
So, to be fair, I mean, it is scary then.
Yeah, so then they all kind of go, all the kids and the new kid kind of go into this abandoned house.
And the Bellows house.
Yeah, the Bellows house, and it's your typical, just creepy, abandoned house, and they find the secret passages that nobody was able to find that's right behind.
Yeah. I was trying to think of that, though. There aren't, like, too many of those around here.
I know. I would have to... I know there's some. I know there's, like,
I mean, like, there are some in, like, Uniontown and stuff, like, nearby towns, but, like, nothing, like, in the town of Connorsville.
Yeah.
Like, we could, like, you could, like, go to and there's, like, scary stories about it or something. Mm. Like, we don't really have that. It's just kind of... That's a sad thing that we're missing.
All the scary things happen to Turtle Rock in Connorsville.
All the scary things happen in real life, not
yeah,
with ghosts
in the
here.
South Connorsville Beach.
Yeah.
Don't ever go there. There's probably heroin needles sticking out of the sand, so...
Wear very good shoes if you do.
Yeah, there's definitely broken glass,
yeah.
For sure. Yeah, then they go there and they, you know, find this hidden room of Sarah Bella's room, and they find her storybook, which, like you said, is kind of all the... Kind of, she used to write these scary stories and
yeah.
Read them to the kids while she was locked up in there, and yeah, it's a whole
yeah.
Backstory.
So I have my thoughts about it, and I have a lot to say about that, but I'm going to save that for the end, because that's almost like a wraparound story for this movie, because you got all of these stories that are from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that this ghost, Sarah Bellows, is writing, and then you have, that's sort of like the wraparound, that's like the main part of the story that's encompassing all these stories from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, like, she is the one telling these stories, and then, like, that's like the final thing that they have to confront,
mm-hmm.
Basically, is this Sarah Bellows. So it's basically like The Grudge, though, to be honest. So, like, The Grudge, the whole point of The Grudge is that there is this, in their life, these people suffered a very tragic, a vicious end, a violent end. And so, in their afterlife, that's the only thing, that's the last thing that they knew, so their spirit continues to do that in the afterlife. They stay at the residence that they died at, and they continue to create that violence.
Mm-hmm.
It's that never-ending cycle of violence, and that's basically the exact same thing that happens here. Is it's we find out, like, later on in the story, like, just to skip ahead there, and then we'll backtrack about the actual writings of the stories, is, like, we find out that Sarah Bella's family, like, thought that she was basically sick, like, she had some things that she was just different, and her family, you know, thought, I can't remember the exact specifics of it, but basically, they put her in an insane asylum, which they were, basically, they ran it, and they tortured her. I mean, they basically shocked her in a chair and stuff like
yeah.
that. You hear, like, these really vicious things, and they literally tortured her physically and emotionally, and, you know, I don't know if they sort of hint maybe some sexual assault there, too, but you can't really,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, like, that essentially that was what she did, and then she told these stories in order to basically, like, get her hatred out of her family, and they ended up happening in real life after she died. So this is essentially the same thing of, like, she had this, like, she was tortured in life, and that's all she knew, and then after she died, basically, she committed suicide, or the story is she committed
mm-hmm.
suicide, and which we find out that wasn't quite the case. But she did the same. She continued that cycle of violence and hatred after her after death. So her spirit continued to do the same thing. So it's a really cool story. You know, obviously, I'll talk about, like, my 2 cents of, like, how they did it, like, towards the end, but, like, yeah, that's sort of, like, the overarching story and the theme that you got going on there with why Sarah Bellows is doing this thing,
mm-hmm.
so that's kind of, like, the cool thing about that, the more I think about it, and then,
Like, but yeah, they get that book from there, as you said, and then they bring it back, and then the stories start getting written, and the first one is the Herald.
The Scarecrow, yes.
Yeah. And man, is that a... Yeah.
Yeah.
There are three scenes in this movie that I probably, every time I watch it, it's probably just going to make me really creeped out. Yeah. That's one of them. And then the bed scene is another one, and then of course the woman, walking. That's for sure. Those three are going to be like every time I watch it, it's going to really like emotionally get me
and
scared.
Also, like this movie like does take place on Halloween, and it does have a good like Halloween thing at first, but also this movie just feels like a movie you'd watch. Just like I get just like that. Creepy atmosphere and just the
and then the theme song is Season of the Witch, and it's a really cool like tone to it, and it really feels fall, like everything about this movie feels very fall like it's really
so
cool.
It, again, is a great movie to watch around this time of year. But yeah, Harold the Scarecrow, boy's just angry at the Scarecrow again, and Scarecrow gives him a piece.
Oh, yeah. He gets turned into a Scarecrow.
Yeah, he does. But, yeah, that scene in the cornfield. Again, just great, like, atmospheric. You know, it's real music. And then you just hear just, like, walking around and stuff like that.
Popping up. And it's just it's really cool way it's done. Mm-hmm. And very tense. Mm-hmm. Like, a very, very well-done atmospheric scene. It's really... Like like I said, there are three scenes that I think are perfectly done with like atmosphere and stuff that are just so good.
Yeah. Then he kind of goes missing, and then a couple of the kids go and check out the cornfield because that story got written.
Yeah.
So they do check out the cornfield, and the Scarecrow is the kid now was wearing the same clothes.
Right.
So they kind of figures like maybe this is maybe that's his name Tommy, I believe, or something.
Yeah.
There's that, so they start kind of thinking that, you know, these stories might be coming true, and then, the next story we get is the girl with the missing toe.
Yeah, which is, Augie is the name, August is the kid's name who goes missing then, but, before that too, so... Basically the kid, he's Indian, and there you get the sheriff of the town, which by the way is played by Gil Bellows, which I find is a funny thing because the Bellows thing, the Sarah Bellows.
Also, Gil Bellows was in the greatest TV movie of all time, Goblin.
Oh,
so he's in a couple Halloween movies at least.
Mm-hmm.
Goblin's obviously way better than this movie, but. But Goblin is that sci-fi movie. We got to cover that one of these years too.
Yeah,
that
would
be kind of fun.
Yeah, Goblin and Room 6. Even though Room 6 isn't a Halloween movie, but it's
a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, so I found that a cool connection. But basically, you get the idea that there's some like racism going on there. Like he like thinks that he doesn't belong there. Like, you know where you're going, son. Like, like he's like there's like that subtle racism of like that. Or maybe not so subtle racism.
Yeah, not very subtle.
And he's like, I'm just passing through. He's like, I'm following the harvest, is what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning that the bully goes missing, basically he knew that his car was trashed, you know, when he stood up for the bully. They trashed his car, and he's getting it fixed. So obviously, he naturally would be a suspect anyways, but obviously with the racism, that's... added on of like, yeah, he's going to suspect him even more kind of thing, and he says don't leave town. And so
there's also a thing with the main character, the girl. She's kind of has a something happened with her mother.
Yeah,
I think she left them, or
it doesn't really say whether or not she killed herself or she just left. It's honestly, I get vibes at either one.
Yeah,
like, I don't know, because they said the father says it's not your fault, which means it could have been suicide, but then other people just say left. So I don't know which one it is.
Yeah. The dad, by the way, is played by Hank from Breaking Bad. So that's a cool thing. He's a great actor. So,
cool actor in a bad show, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that going on. So the dad's kind of overprotective, kind of her, and it's just like, oh, make sure you're, you know, there's stuff going on. Make sure you come straight home after school, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say overprotective, but he's really protective of her and stuff like that. So it kind of does lean more towards that maybe she did kill herself or something, because how protective he is.
Yeah.
But who knows?
You can also tell there, too, that they're both, like, just hanging on barely. Like, they're both, like, really distraught over it, because the dad, she's like, you really have to pick up another shift? And he's like, you know, just, like, really, like, I can't say no. And it's just, like, they're both just not dealing well with it.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's really, I really like the way they did that. That was really good.
Yeah, it's really good dynamic. So, really, only two characters that really get much depth in the movie are her and the new kid, kind of. You kind of see what happens with him later on in the movie, what he's dealing with in his life.
Yeah. Which I do have a problem with the message in the movie with that. The end of that, it's just like, okay. But, anyways, we'll get to that at the end.
Yeah, so, yeah, he, you know, when that happens, yeah, the who took my toe ghost comes around, and, I love that scene, too.
Oh my god, yeah, that's so well done.
That's, the whole sequence is great, when she first goes, took my toe, like, that's so creepy. Then yeah, you just see her walking and stuff like that.
Well, then even when he eats a toe, it's just grotesque, yeah, and it's just like, oh yeah, god.
Yeah, so that happens when you get the bed sequence. I think is probably the best in the, this whole sequence is my favorite in the movie.
It's definitely the best jump scare in the movie, that's for damn sure.
He hides underneath the bed and kind of keeps peeking over and looking up, and it's just super tense. And then eventually it's drugged underneath the bed. And
yeah. It gets drugged into another world because...
Yeah. So, yeah, he goes missing. So, yeah, then everybody kind of knows what's going on. Then after that, then I think after that we kind of get the girl, the sister in the movie. Her story, oh, yeah. She has that spider bite, the big spider bite keeps growing and getting worse and worse.
Until spiders come out of it, basically like Urban Legends' Bloody Mary.
Remember
that one?
No. I remember the shitty CGI spiders, yes, but...
And honestly, you can definitely tell those spiders don't look all that great in this movie either, but the way they did it with the filmmaking made it really done really well, because... Mm-hmm. The scene, it's done from a distance, so you can definitely tell they're CGI and they don't look all that great, but it's shot at such an angle that you can't really tell. It doesn't have that big of an effect on the way that it looks on the scene. And then especially when she falls down and it's done in the dark, that one you can't, you know, it's when CGI in the dark looks much better, like you can't really tell anything, so... The way that scene is shot is done really well to hide the CG in that scene. So, you know, there's a lot of times when they do practical, but obviously you can tell when they do CG too. Obviously, can't have corn and all that stuff growing out of people's hay growing out of people's skin and stuff.
Yeah.
But out of the mouth.
Yeah, so that happens. They actually get to save her in time. So she actually makes it out alive, with the whole spider situation and stuff like that.
Yes, she's the only one that they save.
Yeah,
kind of, I guess the other main character, the guy, kind of, but I don't know if he's, does he have an actual story written about him, or...
What, the nuke? The newest? Yeah, he does.
Okay, the Meetai Dodie Walker's about him, okay.
Yeah, it is. So, then I think they try to break in to learn more about...
The hospital,
Yeah, they try to break into the hospital, learn more about Sarah Bell and stuff like that, and to get, you know, find the records on her, and that's when...
Yeah, they go down to the Red Room.
Yeah, the Red Room.
Which Christian Grey's down there.
Yeah.
It's a tie-in universe. Well, and the red is used a lot throughout this movie, like the red stain on his shirt. So red is referenced a lot, and that's why I think he goes,
the Red Room, and he's like, oh, so I wonder if that's sort of the reference of the Red. And then, of course, whenever that kid gets caught in the, you know, trying to run away, and everything turns red then, which is just, oh my god.
Yeah.
So they go down to get the papers, and they do get it. They do get the papers successfully, and they are looking at them. And then the one kid is trying to get away, and he's running away, and then they set off the alarm, and then there's red everywhere because of the alarm has a red light in it, like, for caution and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see this, like, really heavy-set woman far away, and he runs to the other side, and you see her coming from that way,
mm-hmm.
and runs back, and you see her coming from that way, and she gets just edged a little bit closer. And he runs through the hallway, and there's three separate corridors there. And in each corridor, he keeps running into her, and she's closer every time. And, oh my god, does this scene give me anxiety every time I watch it. It is so well-crafted. And eventually, when she gets up to him, she just hugs him and loves him, and he just dies.
Absorbs his soul.
Yep. So it's really, it's just so perfectly done. And the way that does it, too, it's not a jump scare at the end, either. So it just kind of keeps that vibe. Like, you never really get that tension released there.
Exactly.
And it's just, it's perfectly crafted. And that's, of course, when they find the audio tapes of stories, they find out that she was getting tortured and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a tragic death that happened from that. And so that's when they figure out, oh, she's telling these stories because, you know, she's trying, essentially they think that she's trying to get back at her, you know, she's just lashing out at everybody because
mm-hmm.
she's in such pain. So she tells these terrible stories for that reason. So then they go, but they end up getting, you know, caught, and they get taken to the police station, and she's free to go, but they find out that the new kid is a draft dodger. Like, he got drafted into this is 1968, so this is the Vietnam War time,
yeah.
And draft dodging was very popular, especially for people who were protesting the Vietnam War, and, you know, so what ended up happening, if you were really famous, you just got away with it. Donald Trump didn't. He had bone spurs. That's a famous
mm-hmm.
thing that happened. And his father, his doctor, wrote that he had bone spurs in his left leg or something like that. And so, basically, if you were rich and famous, you got, you know, nothing happened to you. The only person that did happen to was Muhammad Ali. He went to prison for a while because he, you know, he had religious reasons. He was Muslim, and in especially most Islamic sects, there's absolute nonviolence. So you're not allowed to do violence to anybody under any circumstance whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
even in self-defense. Which is fun. You know, he's obviously not from that sect because he's a boxer.
Yeah,
so obviously
exactly.
He's not completely from that. But there, he's definitely from the sect that there is no, like, there's no murder allowed. And so he is, you know, he said, this is my religious thing, and they didn't accept it from him, and he went to prison for a while for that. And that happened to most people who were considered, they said, draft dodgers. That's a, you know, negative connotation term for what they said. They basically just didn't want to die in Vietnam. So
yeah.
It's like, and they didn't want to have participation in the atrocities we were doing over there. So it's like, okay, it's like, yeah, so that's a tough thing. But the funny thing is, this movie, don't know what the message is, because he ends up going anyways, so I don't know what the...
Because
he said, my brother went, and that was the last time I ever saw him, and I didn't want to end up like him, and I'm terrified that that's going to be me. And, like, and then he just ends up going, and it's like, okay, I guess he's overcoming his personal fear, but it has nothing to say about those other things, and it's like, okay.
I don't know if that's just some, I don't think that's really a message.
No, but
sending a message, but it's just like, it's a sad end for his,
yeah,
end of his story. It's just like, everybody else, you know, gets away, and he goes to Vietnam.
He goes to Vietnam to die, so. Okay.
Yeah.
Man.
So,
or at least PTSD at the very best.
Yeah, at the very, very best. So, I guess sucks to be him.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh man. So that was my only thing. I'm like, oh, that's like, I don't know how I feel about that. But like the rest of the part where, like, he's, you know, the Mee Tai Doty Walker part is like, he's like saying to her, like, she refuses to go, like. Okay, so there's this, like, really heartfelt scene with her,
with her calling her dad and her crying and saying, like, I know it was, like, it wasn't your fault. And she was like, people said it was. And, like, she's, like, all that guilt. And she doesn't even tell him that he was, that she's at the prison to come pick him up, the police station. But, so, basically, she's not getting picked up, and she just wants to stay there. And, basically, that was her telling her dad bias. Is like, so, it was really kind of, you know, it's really, like, emotional type scene. And then she ends up getting just locked in the cell next to the new kid. And then he ends up saying, like, I'm terrified to... Like, he feels guilty about it, like, not telling her that he was, you know, running away from being drafted. And he was like, I should have told you sooner. And she was like, I would have thought nothing less of you. And, you know, that's really cool. And then, like, he's like, I'm really scared of what the... If it looks into me and knows and tells a story. So the Mitai Doty Walker then comes through the chimney of the police station. And Gil Bellows is like, you know, he's that, like, hard-nosed cop and, like, doesn't believe anything that they're saying, of course. Because why would you believe people who said, yeah, the book killed people?
Yeah.
So, again, understandably, but they don't overdo it in this movie. Like in Child's Play or the first Final Destination movie. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, the first Final Destination movie. And, like, then the head comes down and it goes, Mitai Doty Walker. And he's like, you got to be shitting me. It's basically, they want to say, you got to be fucking kidding me, like in The Thing. But it's like, it's the same exact thing.
It is kind of
how many times has that been referenced in movies?
A lot.
It was referenced in It Chapter 2. It's referenced in that. I can't remember what else has been referenced in, but it's... Oh, yeah, it's kind of... Yeah. And then, like, he ends up dying, and then it ends up chasing them, and he, the new kid, like, tries to, like, get it to chase him, and it does, and she... he's in a car, and she goes back to the house... the Bellows house, in order to try to stop this somehow, and she sort of ends up, like, once she gets back to the house, it's like a cat and mouse with the Mitai Doty Walker thing. I'm not really that interested in that part. Like, when she gets back to the house, she experiences all these flashbacks of, like, Sarah, like, she's essentially Sarah in this scenario, and Sarah's making her feel what she felt back then, so she can experience that pain, too, and why she's doing what she's doing. So, that part, again, is kind of interesting, too. And then, but the way, I honestly, like, how does it even get solved? How does it get solved? I can't even remember, to be honest, because it's like, I'm, like, trying to think of, like, how do they actually get her to stop doing it?
Or she writes in the book. She writes in the book, she's like, oh, what happened to Cerebellum was a tragedy, you know, her family was evil.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So, like, that part of it is really cool, and then that part I remember really liking, but the parts before it, I remember just being like, so, my main problem with the whole Bellows aspect of this, the Sarah Bellows story, is I really felt like there should have been maybe, like, 10 more minutes of this movie to really, like, actually have scenes with her in it. Because, like, I don't feel like we really got to know that character enough to really be emotionally invested in that part of the story. That's more just, like, the part of the movie where it's like, okay, like, this is the reason why this is happening. It's like, the ghost and the grudge. Like, if they tried to solve that part of the grudge story, but, like, I wouldn't care enough for that ghost to really care about
it. You see more of her backstory, but you actually don't see her.
Right, and you don't really get connected with that.
Yeah.
Like, so, I think that would have really added to that and made that really connect, because I don't really feel that emotionally invested in that part of the story. I think that could have, at least 5 minutes of, like, actual scenes of Sarah Bellows, like...
Yeah, you get, like, a glimpse of her early in the movie with the kid hiding in the closet.
Right. And then you get the tapes, and you get the stories, and then you get the flashbacks there at the end. But you don't really get to see, like, just full-on scenes and really get to connect, like, emotionally invested in this character to really feel for what's happened to her. And, like, I just don't really... I feel like that would have really added to that. Because that's the only part of this movie that I'm not 100% in love with. Like, that part of it where I'm just like, Yeah, like, I see what they're doing with this. And at the beginning of the movie, the opening monologue is, like, it basically says, and this is true. I mean, think of like, the mythologies that we tell, not just, like, in general, like, historic religions. Like, you know, we have, you know, from religions, we have the Noah myth story, we have creation stories, all of those things. We have David and Goliath, all these, like, stories. But then we have stories that we tell nowadays, like in comic books, you know, and like how, that's why I love Unbreakable so much, is like he says that like modern, like comic books are final way of like modern myth storytellings, essentially, is what Samuel L. Jackson's saying. And I really think that that's really true, that, but I think that's extended to movie filmmaking and also novels as well. But, like, those are, like, there's so many, how, like, it, to me, I think is part of our collective conscious now of, like, our, like, that's, like, our 21st century myth of, like, us trying to grapple with our own personal fears, also our collective fears. It's really, that one's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. Those It movies has really become such a cultural thing. But, I mean, even still, I mean, you have, you know, comic book movies, you know, have become, like, such a thing, like, you know, all of their, how many comic book movies come out? I mean, those are modern myths that sort of connect us with, like, these are gods that are battling these other demons and these evil beings and whatever you want to say, but they're us. They should be, at least, at their best. Like, we should be able to be, like, this is me, and this is the things that we go through, and these are connecting us with us. So that's essentially what the opening monologue is trying to say, is like the stories that we tell over and over are our reality. They are true. And that basically this is essentially like, you know, and with urban legends in general, that's what happens. Like they become real to us, not that they historically happened. I mean, there's very few people, like, I mean, obviously you have people that are, like, evangelicals that are like, yeah, every story in the Bible actually happened in history. Like, creation was actually 7 days, and, like, Noah's flood actually happened, and those things like that. Like, there's very few people, though, that are like, okay, those are, but there's so many other people that are like, okay, like, you take that idea, and you put it into a story that's, like, putting it into our cultural context, and you talk about that. You know, and you talk about the themes that are in those stories, and you make it, like, culturally relevant to us, and how many people connect with that. So, like, they become real to us, and they become told over and over again, and they become our myths then, and they become real to us, not, again, not literally, but in a very psychological sense, in a very cultural sense, they become what we live by. And that's essentially what this is saying, is that, you know, from, like, this very specific standpoint, is that was the stories that Sarah Bellas was telling of, like, these are, like, you know, tragic stories, heartbreaking stories, evil stories of death, of torture, of, like, all these things, and then she's rewriting that story at the end. And that's sort of the like, you gotta tell a different story in order to change your life for the better. So, like, you're telling yourself this myth about yourself, this story about yourself, like, you know, like, I'm nothing, I'm this person, and then you tell a different story about yourself in order to better yourself. So, like, that's Jungian psychology in a nutshell, too, which is why I really love that theme of the movie, and that's why this is such a great, like, thematically driven story. I just wish that would have been, that Sarah Bellas part would have been told better, where I would have been more connected and been like, yeah, that's, like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
It's honestly like Mama. Like, I think the ending of that movie is so powerful, and, like, when you just, like, think about it from, like, that mother's love, that mother, like, it's a very tragic story, and it's really emotional whenever you think about it more, but, like, it's just kind of sloppily done And, like, it's the same thing kind of, like, in this movie, is, like, I think it's not really sloppily done, it's just not done as well. I think they just could have added a little bit more to that backstory to make me care a little bit more. Otherwise, I think this is, like, a damn near perfect movie for in my, like, I don't really have much complaints at all. Like, the filmmaking is awesome. The acting, or they're teens, and they're doing a decent job. I mean, obviously, they're not, you know, Academy Award winning actors or anything like that. They're not, like, well versed in doing, like, you know, emoting and things like that. But they're doing a fine job, and like the effects all look pretty really good.
Yeah.
So like other than that, that like little storytelling aspect, this movie would be near perfect for me. It's really scary. It's just got that perfect atmosphere to me too. Like it really got this really cool, unique atmosphere to it. I love it.
Yeah. The only really complaints I would have are just minor, like just the just mainly that the side characters don't really have much to them. They're just kids, kind of. It's kind of, they, like I said, they try to do kind of like an It thing, but with It, like, most of the characters have immense amount of depth to them. All the kids have something going on. The other two kids and the sister, it's kind of just there.
Yeah.
They're likable, so, I mean, there's that. But, yeah, I mean, that could have been, if they would have had more to them, I think we would have cared more about their deaths, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the only thing I have to say. But man, this is my second time watching this movie, and I just love this movie now. Like, it's just the atmosphere is there, at least the storytelling. It's just a really cool premise.
I think the more people go to revisit this movie, I think the more it'll become beloved.
Yeah.
I think it's not getting as much respect right now, but I think people are really going to come around to this movie.
This movie really does have cult classic written all over it. Just, it's going to be beloved in, I think, years to come. But I guess the ending, I guess they get Cerebellus to stop. And then kid goes off the draft. Kid goes to Vietnam. Have fun.
Yeah.
And then the other kids, the sister and the other girl and the father, and her father all go out, and we see them driving together. So that's kind of where it ends.
Yep.
And I've heard that there's a second one being made of this.
Well, I definitely will welcome that too, because I'm really curious to see if they bring in more stories.
Yeah.
And like,
they there's so many to choose from. I mean, they could make they can make an entire series out of this.
Oh yeah.
Maybe the kid makes it back from Vietnam. I mean, that's what we'll see.
Or maybe he ends up in a box, and that'd be fun. That'd be the opening scene.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Buried right next to her mom.
Yeah.
Just be, like, so depressing.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, well. You thought something good came to him? Nope. So, yeah, that's that, man. Like I said, definitely enjoyed this more this time. I have moved this up into my top 10 of last year. I really, really like this movie.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that like my cousin was like, man, when are we watching that again? It's just like, he's like so excited to want to watch it again. He's like, man, that was such a good movie. And I'm like, yeah, it's funny because like all the movies that we've seen, like that's the one where he's like, man, when are we watching it again? It's so fun. It's so funny. We've watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We've watched like It Chapter 2, I can't remember, Joker, but he's like, this one, he's like, yeah, we're going back to this one, when are we watching this one
again?
Yeah,
I mean, it does have a lot of replay value to it. It's a serious movie, but it's not like super serious and super depressing or anything. Like, it has that charm to it, you know.
Yep.
We're going with kids here, I guess it kind of has that It charm to it. Going for it, like we see with a lot of
movies. It does feel very much like Stranger Things, and
yeah,
It, like it's borrowing some things from it, but it's just really its own unique thing, and I think it's really, really awesome. I think I prefer this over the original 2017 It, but not more than It Chapter 2. I don't know. Oh no, I did prefer it more than It Chapter 2 because. Yeah, duh.
Yeah.
I had it high, ranked higher.
I like the first It more than this one, but I like this one more than Chapter 2 by a little bit. I have them at the same rating, actually, but
I like It Chapter 2 for its very complex movie. I just love how
it is.
I'm trying to see where my where It Chapter 2 was on my list from last year.
I think it was like
number four.
Yeah, I think it was in the top five somewhere.
Yeah, it was number four. Which I don't know if it would be above Midsummer anymore. I haven't watched it, of course, since theaters, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, gotta watch that director's cut again. Yeah, but I think I have this on my number.
See the director's cut of It Chapter 2 as well.
Yeah, well, we're still waiting on the director's cut for the first one.
Yeah, and
probably never going to happen.
Oh, God.
Not that it really needs it. I mean, it is, they're great movies on their own. But we could, I guess for the first one, I guess you could have had more development for some of the kids. Like, two of the kids in that movie are kind of do nothing. But most of the kids in the movie are...
Yeah, I just want to see more of the movie. I just want more scenes.
Yeah,
like, I mean, obviously you have 1,200 pages of Stephen King's book to bring into a movie, and as they stand, there's like 5 hours and 15 minutes of the movie, I think, from both movies, just the regular cuts. So they said that there's going to be about a 6-hour cut for both of the movies, or about 6.5 hours. So, I mean, you're still looking at probably half the book that they still didn't bring in. So,
there's,
I mean, obviously,
there's no orgy to be found. I mean, come on now. That should be a half-hour scene by its own.
Go
into detail, yeah.
I'm sure that wouldn't... I'm sure that would go over well for the Victor Salva's directing Jeepers Creepers 3 crowd.
Yeah.
Keyboard Warrior time would be very... I'm definitely... If I'm not... I'm not on Facebook as it is, but I'm definitely staying off of Facebook during that period. I'll be very happy if I stay off then.
Yeah. So, anyways...
Ratings.
Ratings, yes. I'll go first with this one. My first rating was an 8.25 out of 10. I have risen up to an 8.75 out of 10. One of my favorites of last year, just a really cool-ass movie. Yeah, it's great, and I could see it get even better next time I watch it.
Yeah. My last three watches of this movie have been at the same rating. It's just been more cemented, but I'm at a 9.5.
Okay. two Woodsboro haulers tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Which, obviously, the Trick or Treat was a shoe-in. That's like an automatic. But Scary Stories is like one of those where, again, I'm like very underrated, but this is a personal favorite of mine. Like this one, obviously, the connection to the books from my childhood is one of those ones that's an automatic, like very personal. But also, I just thought it was a really well-done movie as it is. Exceeded my expectations, I know that much.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely as pretty much as good of a movie as we could have hoped for a movie like that, for a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie. I mean, it could have been, I really want to see a Goosebumps movie like this. That would be amazing. Please, leave Jack Black out of it.
Not gonna happen.
Yeah, I know.
Well, they left him out of the second one,
I know Nolan saw both of them. He doesn't like either one.
I saw the first one, and I liked it. I have it. It's just kind of like a... Like, I'd throw it on, and my kids would enjoy it kind of thing.
I would be disappointed by it, because
It is. Like, if you're expecting anything serious, it's not at all. Like, it's not even... It doesn't take anything seriously, it's kind of disappointing in that way.
I wouldn't enjoy that very much. Probably feels more like a Scooby-Doo-esque movie.
R.L. Stein is in the movie.
Yeah, I know he is.
The real R.L. Stein.
Yeah. So, that's going to wrap up this episode. Our first episode on the new network. At the end of every episode, we're saying, like, oh, we're going to try to do more episodes, but, God, I don't know what's going to happen next, so...
It's just I don't even know what we're going to do for the end of the year show, because that's coming up in 2 months, and I'm not hearing a whole lot of, like, releases coming out.
Well, yeah, I was...
just like,
I've
I don't
said
know.
Before, like, I want to just do this year and next year, combine them, because most of the movies that are coming out this year are coming out next year anyways. So it's pretty much... This is just basically... 2021 is basically just an extension of 2020.
Yeah.
Plus, I've only watched like 13 movies, so there's no way I'd be able. And pretty much everybody says it's a weak year. Obviously, no.
I haven't watched. There's two movies that I. There's one movie that I think would make my list as be Host, and I haven't watched that one yet.
Host is good. You know, I haven't seen the new Babysitter movie yet.
I haven't that either.
Do you know there's a sequel to The Craft? Do you know that?
Yeah, I haven't seen
that either.
I didn't think that came out yet.
Yeah, I think it's out. Or it's coming out here. I mean, it might be coming out this month. I know we're planning on watching... We were going to watch that for... Might be watching that for our last movie on Halloween.
Oh, and we might just see Hubie Halloween, too. Don't forget that.
No.
I will be watching that eventually, but...
I mean, I could like it. It might just be like... Kind of like the Goosebumps movie. Just like fun, you know, type deal, but...
It's not a Sandler movie.
Yeah. Those are all great nowadays.
Well, Uncut Gems was I've
yeah,
heard
supposed
was
to be
great.
One. It's an A24. Was it an A24 movie or no?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, not too many misses with A24.
Yeah, I got 9 watches for this year. So
yeah,
and then the Host is one, Babysitter's one, The Craft is one, and I probably will watch NFW, but from what I've heard of
VFW,
yeah, but from what I've heard of that, like the tone and stuff, is just not something I'm gonna like right now. Like at one point, I would have probably liked it, but I'm just not in the mood to watch.
Basically,
anything.
Assault on Precinct 13 is what it is.
Okay. Yeah, I don't
it's
know.
It's very heavily inspired by that, at least. But it has a bunch of it's like a very colorful movie too. But yeah, you've seen The Lodge, haven't you, too?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there's just no real reason to make a list this year, really, because it just wouldn't be. It just right now I have about 10, 11 movies that I even like from this year.
Yeah.
So I mean, it just doesn't. It's there's no point. So yeah, and we have episodes that we have planned. I mean,
we could do a Thanksgiving show because we got. You still can do Blood Rage, that's for sure.
Of course,
it's not cranberry sauce.
Yeah,
and we obviously have Christmas episode to do.
Yeah,
too.
Of course, Christmas. Plus, we usually do like just a snow episode
in January or February. One,
yeah,
or
January
two.
Or February.
We got to do the Valentine movie this year.
Yeah,
though.
Plus we got the episode. JP and Carly still need to do that.
Yeah.
Which we're supposed to do this episode, but everything got derailed, so we have to reschedule that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, 2020, it's been...
Oh, man.
Not
2020
fun.
Is the year to forget. The for
yeah,
sure.
I mean, like, it's just been... Just in general, it's been hard to just... for motivation to do episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, we've had a lot of shit happen recently, and it's just like,
yeah.
Okay, we're not doing anything right now.
We didn't really even say that. It's just, like, written into the laws of nature.
I did say on the group page, I did in a live video, I did say what happened. So I guess if you want to, you can find out. But
yeah.
It's just been rough. It's been a rough year for... Yeah, I know pretty much everybody, you know, not just with podcasting, because I know with everybody podcasting too, they haven't been releasing as much either, just not as much coming out, motivation's low, it's a shitty year, so.
Yeah, just right off 2020 is just a year, one of the worst years ever, just forget about it.
Yeah, pretty much, so.
And look.
But luckily we still have Halloween.
Luckily the presidential election's coming up soon.
Really, I didn't know. I just got my 10th text to ask something for Joe Biden today. It's literally, I've gotten at least 7 or 8 of those, and ooh.
Oh, man.
I give everybody, regardless of who they're asking me to vote for, I all give them all the middle finger emoji, because I'm just like, leave me the fuck alone,
yeah,
please.
That's pretty much the sentiment of most people that have a brain.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, Halloween again, when it started coming around with everything that happened, I did start at least feeling like,
yeah,
it's Halloween.
So,
I feel good.
So I didn't decorate until 2 days ago, and I really started to get the feels now. Like,
yeah.
I'm really getting the feels. Like, I decorated, and, like, I got all the lighting inside, and it's got, like, pumpkins and stuff like that in there, and I was like, I'm really feeling it now. I put on Halloween H2O, and I was like, oh my god, I'm feeling it.
Yeah, I started feeling it when it started getting cooler out, and I was just
too.
Yes.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, it's supposed to be in the 80s the next 3 days.
Yeah, the weather's been crazy for October. It's been...
Well, I'm hoping on Saturday it's cold again, because I'm supposed to go hayride Allen, so I'm hoping it gets cold again on Saturday. It just drops 30 degrees.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's that. So, you'll see it. You'll hear from us when you hear from us next.
Right.
Probably soon. Maybe not.
Okay.
Who knows?
Peace.
All right. Peace out.